Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Oh boy, it's the illegal State of the Union. Yes, we have an illegal government sitting in Washington, occupying the White House with the complicity of the gelding old party, the surrendering Republicans, who are going to sit there and dutifully watch somebody who is not elected to office sitting there in the Congress of the United States and is going to preach a bunch of lies. So we have a lying administration, a lying coup that lied to get to power, that has lied to the American people, that calls anybody who challenges the illegal election a liar, and the lies just compound on top of each other. We got lies on top of lies on top of lies, and I have to watch this thing tonight. I have to watch this ridiculous spectacle of Brendan the moron lying to the American people, pretending to be president in front of a Congress that pretends he is the president. Nobody's screaming and yelling. I mean, why are the Republicans even there? So my first question to Brianna, who's here with the government inquiry report, is why are they even there? Why are we going through this farce? Where are the real Republicans instead of the geldings? You know, why don't they do something and just boycott this thing? So, look, this isn't a real administration. So the thing is they don't care. They don't care. It's the Uniparty. They don't care. Well, I think I'm answering my question for me. So let's get to Brianna, and then we'll talk about this. She started as a guest on Action Radio, courtesy of our Constitution reporter, Amber Kemper. Both Brianna and Amber are graduates of Patriot Academy, a place where young folks get to practice writing and advocating legislation and being legislators in a mock session. Brianna immediately impressed all of us as someone we wanted on the show with her own report. With an insightful mind, asking and taking on complex questions, and a growing skill in sarcasm and satire, plus her study of government, history, the Constitution, and our founding, all of her skills and knowledge combine into something pretty incredible here on Action Radio. And now, the Government Inquiry Report with Brianna Cannon. Lies, 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 lies. It's all a pile of lies on top of other lies. Yesterday's lies have to cover today's lies. Today's lies are going to have to cover tomorrow's lies. And tomorrow's lies are going to be all about the lies told tonight in the State of the Union, which is by the illegal government lying, lying, lying. Are you getting a theme here, Brianna?
Yes.
What do you think?
And it is. It's absolutely crazy. And one of the reasons that, you know, people are getting away with it is because of who has the power and how the power has transferred over the years into the hands of our government completely.
Interesting. Well, no, I think that's a brilliant statement. Let's follow that through a little bit. So how has the power transferred to more and more government away from the people?
For example, whenever we're trying to impeach, you know, it's for some reason we're not being able to impeach him. But, you know, everybody was all for, you know, impeaching Trump, and everybody was getting right on it multiple times.
Even the Republicans, it's amazing, the geldings, I call them, the gelding old party. For those that don't know what a gelding is, look it up. But it's amazing to me that the final impeachment of Trump was by a voice vote. They didn't even do an investigation. They just took a poll. That wasn't an impeachment. That was a poll. Who thinks he should be impeached? Oh, we do. Oh, you're all Democrats. Yeah, how about that? And the weird thing, here's the weird thing. The Democrats stole the House in 2018. There never was a Democrat majority. They overturned 7 seats in California after the election. They kept trucking in ballots, saying, oh, we found more ballots. We found more ballots. 3 weeks later, these elections were resolved. But in actual fact, they cheated. They frauded their way in. So none of those impeachments, in fact, nothing that has happened in the Congress since at least 2018, possibly earlier, was legal because they frauded the House. There was no House. There wasn't a legitimate House. How's that? Let's put that in the mix.
Yeah. One of the signs of a dictatorship or a growing dictatorship is fraudulent or rigged elections.
Well, they have to, because the people don't vote for a dictatorship, which raises a bigger question.
Yes.
That I think we're getting to here is, you know, why would a free people tolerate this? Well, if the free people aren't tolerating it, but how much of our population do you think thinks of themselves as free or is actively thinking of themselves as free as compared to, say, the World War II generation? Because this is what I think goes to the heart of what you're talking about, that there's a tolerance now. You know, as the government has assumed more power, they had to have either taken it or been given it. And I'm thinking people over time, freedom is not as big a deal. They want stuff. They want free freedom. To them is free stuff as opposed to is to the ability to get your own stuff.
Yeah, I think it's a very like short-minded problem of, you know, mm-hmm. people wanting things in the immediate, not the long run. I remember the other day I was listening to some like religious theologian or something of that sort, and he was talking mm-hmm. about like the change in mindset of generations. And he was talking about like not only how like we've been dumbed down, but also like the narrow-mindedness of, you know, understanding the world around us. How he was talking about the generation today can't even see what's going on or understand. They don't understand that it's wrong or that we don't have our freedoms anymore. They can't see it.
That's fascinating.
I think that's one of the things that people.
Yeah, you're right on.
You said about realizing that we're free, because, you know, everybody still thinks, you know, America's a free country, but we're not the same free America that we used to be. We're not so much of a free country anymore, and it's slowly, or now at this point, quickly, you know, becoming less and less free.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you take away history and the knowledge of history, I remember, like I say, I've talked about this for a while when, you know, I realized this country had a huge government when I first got here. So I got here when I was 12 years old and by way of Canada to Australia. And the first thing I noticed was how big the federal government was and how they were everywhere. And I learned about the Holocaust when I was 10 years old. And so there's this World War II special out of Britain called The World at War. And they had about 24 different episodes covering the whole war. It's narrated by Laurence Olivier. And so one of England's greatest actors. But they had people, because it was made in the 60s, they had people who were still there alive, you know, during World War II. They're only, you know, 20 years older, 20, 25, 30 years older, maybe, depending. But it was fascinating to watch this. And, I'm thinking to myself, and of course, the big thing was the Germans all said, well, we didn't know. You know, it's like, well, how could you not know? Well, it's easy when you see how governments keep things secret. But the other thing is, once you did know, what did you do? Well, we couldn't. The Nazis were in charge. You know, and I think, how could this happen? How could Hitler get elected in a prosperous, Western, educated, elite nation like Germany? Why would they elect somebody like Hitler? Well, they did, you know, because the circumstances were there, the economy and everything else. But the problem is that people don't think of that. When you hear Hitler, the reference today, people think of Trump. So, well, he's a Nazi. He's a fascist. He, you know, and somehow it's been twisted that freedom is like Orwell. Remember the three things that Orwell said? Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength. War is peace. But do you remember those? Have you heard those quotes you said Orwell at all?
Yeah, I've heard them before, yeah.
Okay. Well, I think they apply. Because if freedom is slavery, then slavery is freedom. And so if you indoctrinate, you know, younger folks over time that, you know, to be controlled is good, you know. Have you ever heard the comments that people, when they talk about hate speech, and people go around and do polls, especially on college campuses, and they'll say, well, do you think hate speech is you know, covering the First Amendment, or should we just block hate speech? I'm like, yes, we should. Well, you ask, you know, folks, different generation, what are you talking about? You know, yes, you know, me. You know, our 60s crowd. I say, you crazy? That's just the government imposed speech. They're just blocking things they don't want. Or misinformation is truth. Let's add to Orwell, misinformation is truth. You know, today's conspiracy theory is tomorrow's truth. And if conspiracy theories weren't true, they wouldn't attract so much attention. I thought of that one a few minutes ago before the show. So there's a people
there
are just
a,
go ahead.
There was a Charlie Kirk little clip that I saw, and it was about that exact same thing. And he was asking this one girl, it was like a very short one. He was asking this one girl, because he was talking about California, you know, if she believes that people should go to jail for hate speech or for misgendering people. And the girl was saying, yes, they should. And was agreeing that people should go to jail for hate speech or misgendering people. I don't understand how a person can even get to the point of thinking that, but that's where, you know, everybody's at, for people to think that.
Do you sometimes feel like you're in a different world? Like you're in the wrong century?
Yes.
because I have for a lot of my life. I'm in the wrong century. I'm thinking like a 1700s, you know, free dude, founding father, you know, sitting in a land of swamp people that want the government to, you know, babysit them, you know, change their diapers as adults and take care of them. Like, what's going on around here? That is fascinating. How do you misgender someone? Let's talk about that. I mean, I know what it is, but I mean, just what do you mean misgender? If you call somebody by a different gender, does that change their biology? Does it change their chromosomes? I'm sorry. This is just a fascinating concept to me. You misgendered me. What? I'm really a man or a woman, depending on my mood. What? Are you insane? That's actually a thing, right? Yeah. Misgendering. Do friends talk about that kind of stuff?
Not really. Okay. Like, I don't have any, like, weirdo friends. Like,
do you have any liberal friends? Oh, you've got to have some. No?
Yeah, but not really.
You don't talk
anymore.
Politics? Oh, that's now that's interesting in itself. Now, why do you think that is?
Like as soon as they figured out that I was conservative, they didn't want to be. But then for the others, we just kind of like other friendships, you know, you just kind of like drift, stop talking, like have different lives and directions. So it wasn't really like a political thing in some instances.
So that's very interesting because I don't remember talking. Well, I mean, I talk politics as a kid. I've been interested in politics since probably, like I said, I was about 10. But I don't remember ever losing friends over it. I think that's relatively new. I think that the importance of who you identify with politically, it's not just gender identification. It's, I mean, you know, it's mischaracterized politically. So in other words, if you label somebody a conservative or a liberal, we never thought about it then. We didn't think in terms of that. I mean, there was politics and there's government and there's policy and things like that. But, you know, when I was younger, we were worried about, you know, band and sports and, you know, fun stuff. And the people that I associate with, my friends, were usually people with common interests. Either we were on the same sports team, because in Australia, they made you play sports. It wasn't an option. But you know, in the United States, it would be like, because I did mostly music and art stuff here, theater and that kind of thing. And so, my friends, and I'm sure there were, and I know there were extremely liberal people, and I wasn't really conservative yet because I was in New England. It wasn't really allowed, if you know what I mean. But as I got older, especially in college, you know, and I noticed that the change had already split. And this is the 80s, late 70s, early 80s when I went to college. And so I could see the beginnings of what's going on now. But now, I mean, your political affiliation is really your identity almost, as we split the country into the different groups. What do you think?
Well, I mean, identity politics is like one of the key factors of communism.
Okay. Sounds like you've been working
Everybody's
on a project.
Everybody's put into a category based on their identity.
Okay. Did you work on something recently because you got elections? Fraudulent elections are part of a dictatorship because they can't let the people vote. So why do you think why do you think so in other words, the Democrat Party today or the Unit Party must think of themselves as communists because they refuse to allow a regular election. In fact, they must think that their candidates and their policies are so bad that they can't run them in a regular fair election. Would that be fair to say?
Yes.
So what does that say about
that?
Go ahead.
The conversation of like Orwell and like identity politics, it kind of led. Have you seen those things where they're pushing like in schools and stuff about? And like, there's this one thing that really blew up. It was some kind of like chat little bot thing or something. I'm not sure. It was like responding to things, and it was somebody who was asking about like each different race on it. Like, what are five things that this race could do better, or something like this, or what's something that this race could do better? And they're doing like Asian, Black, White, and Hispanics, and for the Black, Hispanics, and Asians and stuff, they were saying, oh, there's nothing, you know, that nobody should ever be judged on their, you know, race or skin color or anything, and things like that. And then when they did it for the white person, they put an entire list of things that white people need to work on at the bottom, like somebody like had captioned it. And they were saying, all races are equal, but some races are more equal than others.
Yeah, you know what that's from?
Referring to.
Yeah. Do you know what that's from?
Yeah, Animal Farm. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Animal Farm. Talking.
Well, Animal Farm is Human Society. Another famous book, Lord of the Flies. We studied that in school too, about a British. I think it's a ship that gets shipwrecked, and it's from a boys' school, and so all the adults are dead, and it's nothing but young boys, and they try to form a society. It's horrible. It's like the most primitive, barbaric, you know, no rules. This is what happens when there's no rules. But this is interesting, and so now we've got an Animal Farm mentality. We've got politics in Washington where they don't they're so fearful of the American people that they refuse to let an actual election happen. So they're taking that away. So the freedoms have kept disappearing. The taxes are higher. The economy sucks. And we're in an interesting place. Given that, what can they possibly tell us in the State of the Union that isn't a lie?
Yeah. I'm honestly not sure why they do it. Because anybody who is going to be watching it in general is people mm-hmm. who most likely already have seen all the corruption and know it all, you know, because mm-hmm. anybody who still believes everything's on the up and up is probably not going to be watching the State of the Union. So I could say it's just for show, but I don't really know who exactly they're going to be showing it to. I really don't know.
Well, it's actually in the Constitution. Where it says that the president from time to time has to report on the State of the Union. But it doesn't give a defined time. It's kind of evolved into this, you know, yearly ritual where you have, the president, and then you have the Speaker of the House and the Senate person behind them. It's a joint session of Congress. Let me see if I can find it here. Article 2. Removal. Here we go. President says for conversation before entering Section 2, President, Commander-in-Chief. We'll talk about Commander-in-Chief at some point, too. Here we go. Section 3. He shall from time to time give to the Congress information on the State of the Union and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge. I guess they assumed all presidents would be men. Necessary and expedient. He may on extraordinary occasions convene both houses or either of them in the case of disagreement between them with respect to the time and adjournment, may adjourn them to such time as he shall think proper. Oh, that's interesting. I'd forgotten the president can actually convene the Congress. That is interesting. I guess it would be an emergency times of war or in case that, you know, the Chinese launch a balloon, which apparently takes a week to shoot down. Speaking of which, how safe do you feel with a government that can't shoot down a balloon in 1 week with nuclear missiles that could be here in 30 minutes or less? Hypersonics even less.
That whole thing, it's just angering and frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like the lies on top of the lies.
It's not surprising that our government did it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's ridiculous that it happened so blatantly, but it's really just, you know, even more frustrating because it's just another sign of how far down the rabbit hole we've really gone.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate.
And then China comes back and says that they are going to are up for retaliation for it.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. If you're speaking of dictatorships and communism again. So communism, the Marxist dialectic, the contradiction, saying one thing and having it mean something completely different. The people who are accusing us of saying that the government is a fraud are the people who perpetrated the fraud. So in other words, the people that stole the government are accusing people who say they stole the government of lying. so why wouldn't the Chinese say that you shot down our weather balloon? It was an accident. And of course, if you look at my Facebook page, you haven't yet, but if you go to a weather chart, and I pulled up the weather charts and I put them on, I said, look, the wind was flowing east to west. If this thing, you know, went from Alaska over the continental United States, it had two choices. One, it was going to head back over the Pacific, or two, there was a huge low pressure over Quebec. It should have ended up there. Because that's the way the wind was going. Should have flowed, the jet stream should have bounced it back to Quebec. There's no way this thing wasn't powered because it was fighting winds all the way across the entire United States and going in different directions. It took a week, and then they shot it down with a missile, blowing it up so that we couldn't recover any of the good stuff on it. Why didn't they just put like a little laser hole in it and let it deflate and kind of come down naturally? I don't know. There's just so many questions on this. It's just fascinating. But again, you've never seen a good administration. Well, except, no, that's not true. You saw the Trump administration. So let's just compare how you felt under Trump in terms of believability, security, and under Brandon, which has only been for a couple of years. So you would have remembered Trump pretty well. What do you think?
For me, I didn't worry. And a lot of that is, like, how much I really looked into it. You know, during the Trump administration, you know, like, you knew some things. You pay a little bit of attention. But I didn't really, like, go into it or a lot of things that happened because, you know, I felt like we were going in a good direction. You know, we were building up America and making it good and strong and safe and stuff. And then, I mean, as soon as 2020 and stuff, it's when, like, I really started getting more into things. And I think part of that is, you know, that fear, you know. Like, some people, whenever, like, when something like 2020 happens, you want to go and learn more and stuff in order to, you know, prepare and understand what's happening around you. And that's what I did.
No, I think you're not alone. I think the question is how to unite everybody. Turning Point, do you have any connections with the Turning Point folks? Because I've tried to reach them and, you know, and it's, I've sent messages and emails and things like that. But like Patriot Academy, for example, do they have, is it like a Turning Point connection? You know, I'd love to get both the organizations involved in some kind of a lobbying and uniting, you know, folks like you who are graduates, you know, all around the country. And we've talked about this before, but there's got to be a way to take all this, you know, because nobody really acts alone. I don't act alone at Action Radio. I've surrounded myself with people who know other people who know other people. And I've been able to get, like, you know, Christina Bob on the show. I've got, you know, we've had Peter Navarro on the show. I've got senior Trump advisors and a senior Trump attorney. You know, so we're very close to reaching some goals here. But Turning Point, the college. When I was in college, I was unbelievably active. I was an investigator. I was doing all kinds of just outrageous things. I had an internship in Washington, D.C. in a consumer group back in my liberal days. Washington changed that. But it's just a great time and a great resource to have all these folks, especially in school, who have time to do stuff like this. Well, if you have a connection, let me know.
Patriot Academy.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think that Patriot Academy has some connections.
Okay, let me start there then. We'll see what we can do. So what's on your mind? What issues have you been puzzling over?
In the past, like, couple of days, things have just wreaked havoc, like, everywhere.
Okay.
Of course, there was the big Chinese balloon fiasco. And then supposedly it came out that during the Trump administration, the general said he just failed to recognize that there were balloons there before.
Trump missed a three school bus size object floating across the entire United States. Yeah, right.
And everybody's like calling. And the general was like, I guess they have footage of him saying, you know, China's not the enemy and things like that. And they're like, oh, he's just another communist puppet. But
is that Milley you're talking about? The Joint Chiefs of Staff guy that called his counterpart in China saying that, you know, because he's a traitor. I mean, he's just an outright traitor. To go against the commander-in-chief, the president, well, we should talk about whether the president's actually commander-in-chief. That'd be an interesting discussion. I'll tell you about that maybe for next week, especially with somebody who isn't even president. But the idea that a general, especially the general, you know, head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, would call China in defiance of the president of the United States to say, we're not going to attack you, and if we do, I'll let you know, that's treason. You talk about aid and comfort to the enemy. Even if Trump had no intention of attacking China ever, he may have wanted to give the impression that he could. So that's what diplomacy is. And I don't think we've ever really talked about diplomacy, world strategy, things like that, geopolitics. One of the things I heard about in the Vietnam era was that one of the strategies Kissinger used when he was Secretary of State. You ever hear him speak? He talks a little like this, the master of the world, Henry Kissinger. All right, so he's got this really deep voice, right? So he went to Vietnam. He said, look, you know, Nixon's crazy. He might nuke you guys. You know, and of course, this is Watergate. Everything else was going on. Nixon was quite unstable at that time. But Kissinger used that against North Korea. Said, you better come to the bargaining table. I can't control this guy. I don't know what's going to happen. So, and that actually worked. You know, North Korea's like, yeah, well, we don't want to get nukes, but we certainly don't want to, you know, Vietnam, excuse me. So even if Milley, you know, knew that we weren't going to attack China, he still shouldn't have said anything, simply because Trump might have wanted, you know, more wars to stop by bluff. Did you ever read Sun Tzu, The Art of War? You ever talk about that in your educational travels? All right. Sun Tzu is one of my heroes, and a lot of people. So the liberals all know Sun Tzu. It's in the movie Wall Street where Charlie Sheen, you know, recites it to Michael Douglas, you know, trying to get a job. So Sun Tzu's basic principle is all war is deception. You know, you attack the enemy when you're strong and they're weak. You retreat when they're weak and when you're weak and they're strong. You know, you only fight when the battle's already won before you get to the battlefield. All this kind of new, of military strategy stuff, but it applies to everyday life. You know, the Japanese business is war. There's another thing on that too. So I think you'd find it fascinating. Look up some Sun Tzu. I think I have some quotes that we can go over here in a little bit. But if all war is deception, what is politics?
Even more deception?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I didn't know how to complete the sentence, but I'm just thinking, yeah. So if, and that, now let's follow this through. If all politics is deception, then what?
We're doomed.
No, we're not. That's why I created Action Radio. I'm an eternal. See, you got to understand, I'm an eternal optimist. I believe we can get out of this. But it's going to take a lot of folks. It's going to take some people, you know, much younger than me, you know, like, I don't know, you, to kind of carry on and build something. So I'll start it. I'll do as much as I can. But then we have to go from there. Oh, here we go. Sun Tzu quotes, right? Appear weak when you're strong and strong when you are weak. The supreme art of war is to subdue the enemy without fighting. Oh, there's something interesting. So if you were to subdue the American population, thinking as a Chinese warlord from, 2,000 years ago, how would you do it?
How would I do that as a Chinese warlord 1,000 years ago?
No, how would you do that? Well, how would you – thinking like a Chinese warlord, you know, I mean, I'm trying to – well, I'm sort of drawing parallels between what Sun Tzu said, you know, 2,000 years ago, all war is deception. The supreme art of war is to subdue the enemy without fighting. What would you do to the American people to subdue them, to win? What I believe, they think they're at war with us. What do you think?
Do you mean like the federal government is at war with us?
Uh-huh. Not in a shooting war yet. But do they think that
is the government versus the people. Because the government is supposed to be for the people, but they're doing everything that's against the people's interest. They're trying to arm against the people and, you know, take more money, take away their rights. So it is against the government and the people. And they're just trying to make it to where there's no way we can actually fight against them.
See, that's what I'm wondering. I see, you know, so-called gun control, which is not gun control, it's confiscation and banning. Whereas the government has 87,000 new, what I call bureaucrat infantry. I'm actually putting it in war terms. In fact, I've got a Substack. If you have a chance, check out my Substack articles. Feel free to use them for class. I think it'd be interesting. But the whole idea of the federal government, in fact, I'm going to write an article. I've been meaning to write it for a while, called The Nation of Government. So the government in D.C. thinks of themselves as a country. And we're like the colonies. So they draw taxes from their colonies, much like England drew taxes, you know, from our original 13 colonies and ruled over us with magistrates, with courts, with unnamed bureaucrats hidden away in England. And all this stuff was done from some distant place. And we couldn't really question it. And that's where taxation without representation came from and everything else. So Washington appears to have replaced England. And I really think they think of themselves as their own country. With their own citizens, with their own elitists, you know, you are, if you belong in D.C., you're actually separate from the rest of the country, like it's somehow its own nation with its own borders and everything else. Once you cross the border into D.C., there's a different set of laws, different set of rules. You know, if you come from around the country and you walk into the Capitol, even though you're invited, you can end up in the D.C. gulag. It's almost like a separate, I'm just sort of rambling here, but what do you think? How separate is Washington from the rest
of the
country?
Yeah, they even have their own wall.
Yeah, they did. They surrounded the walls around the Capitol. So we can't have a okay, so let's talk about illegal aliens. 5 million illegals into the country. Have you seen any effect of that, either in crime or more crowded roads or schools or anything like that? Have you seen the effect of all these people?
Like, not personally, like up close, but I've heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've never had, like, a personal interaction, but, yeah, I've heard a lot about it. I remember just the other day, I think it was yesterday, there was this notice that came through of a bus full of, like, teens that were leaving out of Texas. They were illegal aliens, and most of them were girls, and that they were part of human trafficking, but it was funded by this NGO that was funded by our government, which kind of is like gets rid of the point of an NGO if it's literally funded. But that
no, you're right.
Confused me. But technically, they were.
Well, no, we'll talk about that. But tell me what you're
talking
about.
They were using the thing of the story was like, you know, they're using taxpayer dollars to run this human trafficking across our border, and you know, that was one huge thing, but.
No, it is a huge thing. In fact, if you ever get a video of this bus, you know, send it to me. I'll post it. And then we have an Action Radio video page, which apparently a bunch of people in the Philippines are trying to join. They keep sneaking in. I'm not sure how they're sneaking into my video page. But, yeah, it's like, oh, stop that, folks. You know, I all my groups are controlled anyway. But the point is that video, if you could show that video and send it to all your friends, say, look, here are the illegals, you know, and then we can track it down. Now, I'm trying to get some – one of my many things on my list is to go to our local Catholic charities and say, how many illegals are you sponsoring? What's your budget? You know, Catholic charities, Lutheran charities, these are church groups. Now, so an NGO stands for non-governmental organization. But if they're funded by the government doing the government's work, are they not a governmental organization? Seems to me they're misnamed.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just,
so do you have,
I guess, words to, I don't even know if, like, at the beginning, they may have been, like, actual – and I think there are some organizations that aren't for the government.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think a lot of them are. And so, well, I don't know if the name was just something that stuck with them, even though they transferred, you know, all the funding from the federal government, or if they're doing it as just a tactic to make people think that they're not part of the government. I think it might be just multiple reasons.
Yeah, because I remember, I know the Salvation Army, which I used to think was a really good organization, and it was. It was started by, you know, Christian folks way back when to help poor people. And I think that's how Catholic charities, I think the church charities, that's how they started. You know, because earlier in our history, the government was not providing welfare to everybody, which was a good thing. Government's not supposed to do that. But this is where private charities were doing a great job, and a lot of them were church-based. And I think that made a lot of sense. That's exactly where charity should come from, you know, family and church and community and everything else. The problem was that somewhere along the line, I think as you first mentioned, they got political. And just as a communist society controls, we're sort of making a list, right? They control the elections. They dumb down the population and education. We can get to media at some point too. But one of the other things they do is they control all the charities, the health, the medicine, and they have all these minions, all these bureaucrats. And it's like an extension of government that's unaccountable. So Catholic charities, which might have at one point, and I think they did, you know, serve poor folks and help out. Now they're political. Now they're actually bringing illegal aliens to the United States, you know, quote, resettling. In other words, infiltrating them, you know, into our country. So when did that happen?
Yeah, that's a nationwide thing. You know, people are now catering to illegals instead of our own homeless population. I mean, there's like a huge thing in New York about all the illegals, you know, complaining about their fancy, expensive hotel that they were staying in illegally. But,
well,
you know, it gets to be that ridiculous.
Well, let me ask you about that. If you feel entitled enough to walk in the United States and violate our laws, you know, and you're given all this stuff. I mean, so their view of the United States is this is the country, you know, where you get anything you want and the American taxpayers will give it to you. They don't even think of the taxpayers, but you come in here and get what you want. Why wouldn't you complain about your hotel? We created this.
Yeah.
You know, of course, we have homeless people saying, are you kidding? You know, so American citizens, so now this is a double standard. So now you live in a country where illegal aliens are brought in complaining about their hotel when a lot of Americans can't even afford to go to a hotel and certainly wouldn't get a free ride if they did.
Yeah.
So here's the big question. How do we send these illegal aliens home?
Well, I mean, the first thing that you'd have to do is you'd have to close the border and, you know, finish the wall completely in order to not let them back in or more in. So the first thing is to, like, stop the flow inwards.
Okay.
And then
agreed.
From there, just deportations.
Got any other ideas? Obviously, I'm leading to some. This is a rhetorical question. Rhetorical question time. Do you have any other ideas?
I don't know. That one seems like the most simple one.
But that's expensive. So how do we send the illegals home
without
costing taxpayers money? Because they already spent enough money on them being here in the first place. Let's see if your creative mind can come up with something. I know it's kind of on the spot now, but obviously I have an answer that I thought of, and I want to run that by you.
There's
some
violent ideas, but I don't think those are very plausible.
Okay, so let's classify these as we're not going to do this, but what are you thinking?
Drive them out by citizen force.
Okay. What would that look like? Disclaimer, we're not doing this, folks. We're just talking. Okay, so let's put that on the recording. Yeah, how would you do it? No, I'm serious. Because what if it comes to that? You remember the old revolution, you know, torches and pitchforks? You know, the, you know, sire,
that's
sire, the peasants are at the gate. Okay. All right. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about a mob. What if a mob does come about? Whose fault is that? And what would that mob do? What would that mob look like? And would it be torches and pitchforks, or would it be a higher standard of weaponry?
Maybe a little
here.
Bit higher in form of, you know, like a citizen
so what are we talking
militia.
About? Okay. What would they do?
They would drive them out with force.
To where? From where? How big a scale are we talking about here?
Well, it'd be like a widespread idea, of course, like a bunch of them, and just continually drive them down or continually drive them to the border or into the ground, if not the border.
Oh, define into the ground. Now you got me curious.
Theoretically.
Of course. We're just talking theoretically here, but this is interesting now.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's an option,
though. You know, it's like
it is an option.
Please.
No, absolutely. So here's the thing. Remember the old expression, ride out of town, run out of town on a rail and tarring and feathering? I don't recommend tarring.
I don't know the rail one, but I know tarring and feathering.
Okay, so this was a torture, basically. In other words, you pour hot tar on people, and then you spray them with like, chicken feathers. I'm not sure who thought of that.
Oh, yeah, I knew that one. I didn't know the rail one.
Okay, so run out of town on a rail. See, back in the 1800s, the way that transportation was done was water and rail. Those are the biggest forms of transportation. Water was kind of slow, but our rivers were amazing. But it didn't really work out west because most of the west is a desert or mountainous. So that's the land of rail transit, especially the Transcontinental Railroad. So if you're run out of town on a rail, it literally meant you were put on like a sidecar or something like that. You were put on some kind of device on the railroad tracks, and you were literally run out of town. So the question is, if you run illegals out of one town, that's going to push them into the next town. So now we got a chain reaction here. And it's still going to be expensive, which means people have to time, get their guns, find out who the illegal aliens are, put them on a rail or a bus. What if we run them out of town on a bus? What if we commandeer in the public interest the same buses from the government that brought these people in and use those buses to take them back to the border?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's try. So we got the option of force because it's our country. What else can you think of? You can work on this for next week,
like
too.
The force and the deportation. I mean, the ideas of having like a stronghold and a demand on it seem like the best scenario and the quickest and the easiest one.
What if all driver's licenses had citizenship printed on them?
Don't you have to be a citizen to get one?
Not in California. Not where I was. You do in Florida.
No.
Do you Oklahoma? Do you have to be a citizen to get a driver's license?
I mean, I just figured it was just like that in general.
No, it's not. No, that's what the whole motor voter rule was all about. So California has as many illegal aliens voting as millions. I mean, literally millions of illegal aliens driving and voting in California. They don't care. They're a sanctuary. It's an illegal state, you know, violating every law you can think of, protecting criminals. They're actually harboring fugitives. That makes them accessories to the crime. So you could arrest every legislator in California that hasn't worked against illegal aliens, and I think you'd be okay. There's another rule, too, for government. It's Title 18, Section 241, conspiracy against rights. When two people or more people conspire to oppress the rights of Americans with the exercise or enjoyment of our rights, that's a felony. You can go to jail for that. And so there is a punishment for violating constitutional rights. My solution was a little different. I use civil asset forfeiture. Are you familiar with that?
No.
Okay. So back in the 80s, back when the big drug deals were going on, you ever see the TV show Miami Vice?
No.
Oh, it's kind of cool. It was like, you know, for especially for all us, you know, like teenage dudes, it was great. You know, great cars and boats and all kinds of technology, and everybody looked, you know, wonderful. It was fabulous. I have to get my Miami Vice jacket. Anyway, so this is big in the 80s because there was a huge drug problem in Florida. Cocaine was coming in from Central and South America, mostly Colombia. And people were making huge fortunes. And so they had these special vice squads that would go after them and try and get rid of the drug. But what they had at that time was something called civil asset forfeiture. So they would confiscate anything involved in a crime. So you could take the boat, the airplane, the house. You could take all the stuff. And unfortunately, it was used badly. It got corrupted when officials, law enforcement, were basically taking things from people and saying you had to prove you didn't commit a crime to get your stuff back. And of course, they were selling it, keeping the guns, keeping everything else. That was illegal. That was unconstitutional. But they did it anyway. Eventually, that was stopped, and you had a situation where you have to get a conviction before you can confiscate property, which is the way it should be. Yeah, I don't have a problem with confiscating, you know, the goods of criminals, but you got to get a conviction because you don't want to confiscate from the honest people. That's the whole point of law, is to protect the honest people. We're not trying to – yes, we're trying to prosecute the criminals, but really our rights are set up to protect the honest people. However, no one's thought to apply civil asset forfeiture to illegal aliens. Now, the fact that illegal aliens are in the country illegally is a conviction, as far as I'm concerned. So why don't we just take all their stuff? And we could use that to fund ICE and fund other things. And just, you know, I think it would cause the greatest self-deportation in world history. If we started taking everything, houses, bank accounts, cars, you know, everything, investments, businesses, anything that belongs to an illegal alien in this country, you seize it under civil asset forfeiture. Well, how long do you think these folks are going to stick around here? If all this stuff's being forfeited and given back in rebates to American taxpayers.
Yeah, not very long. Not very long.
Yeah. And it's the money, and it wouldn't cost any money. It'd be self-funding by the, you know, we can take the assets taken, you know, cash those in. It wouldn't take, you know, manpower. We could do it by computer. IRS has what's called the ITIN number, individual tax identification number. So we could literally go through and do like an illegal alien census, you know, based on the ITIN number, investigate people. If they're found to be illegal, just start confiscating all their stuff or give them like a 30-day warning. So your stuff's going, everything. Or you could do a nationwide warning to the whole country. Of course, then the left will go apoplectic. It's like, hey, we don't care. It's going to happen. You know, millions of people would leave this country.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the question. Do we have a right to a nation?
I remember something that happened.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. No, you first. Then I'll ask my big question. No, go ahead. I'll ask my big question.
Mine's like a mine's like kind of like the same idea, but a different topic. So
go for it. No, go ahead. Tell me.
Okay. So there's this one thing about like California was doing that's like an impact like all the other states, and it was by a campaign manager. I'll have to find what his name was, but it was talking about like how California is going to be like a sanctuary state for minors to come for like sex change and hormone and all the different things for minors. Mm-hmm. And like California is going to be like the sanctuary state for them to come from like any state. And he was saying like basically it's like an attack on all the other 49 states because it takes the citizens from all the other states going to California to allow this instead of even though all the other states, or even though some of the other states might not allow it or might not have it in their laws and stuff.
You know who else wouldn't allow it?
State.
What about the parents in these other states?
Yeah.
Are they bringing in teenagers without parental permission? Are they funding this? Are they opening? How does that work?
The big point was like without. Yeah, the big point was like you don't need parental permission or anything.
So, What kind of mentality is this? That, and where did this come from? Because this is all new. This whole idea of first of all, you can't change gender. You know, we know that. You can't change your chromosomes. All you can do is surgically alter yourself in bad ways, because nothing good comes out of this, or chemically drug alter yourself in bad ways. So there's nothing good here. And it doesn't accomplish what you're trying to do. You cannot change your gender. You cannot change your sex. What you're born with is who you are. You can change your body, but you can't trans. You can't transition to something else. You are who you were born to be.
Yeah.
So why is this
and
so important?
One of the,
go ahead.
One of like the biggest things that I've heard like within the whole idea of it is it turns into a lifelong medical case where you're basically owned by the medical industry, which is owned by the federal government. So basically you're on a controlled leash for the rest of your life if you go through with hormone changes or surgeries and stuff that have to do with sex change. And then on the other hand, it's also like a separating of the parent and the child. And that's like always been kind of like a communist tactic, and we've seen that for years.
Absolutely.
You know,
yep.
Since they first started separating children from their families. You know, it's a way for the government to control the next generations to fit their boot. And, you know, it's kind of what we see now. And it goes back to, like, the same Orwellian idea of, you know, when the animal, like, in Animal Farm, the animals, you know, they truly thought everything was great and good and stuff. Even though life was obviously worse for them, they all thought, oh, yeah, it's great. You know, it's better than it was, but they don't even remember how it was. They don't know how it was because they've been, you know, so indoctrinated. And that's how it is today. People are, you know, it's gotten so much worse, and people are saying, oh, no, it's better. You know, it's better than it was, but they don't even know what it was because they've been so brainwashed over it.
No, it's absolutely true. But this is new. There's a lot of things that have happened fairly recently, this idea of changing genders. And it seems to be it seems to be an obsession. It's like abortion. It's like an obsession to the left. I wonder, why are you doing that? I wonder if they would, favor abortions like where the baby lived, where it was. We actually have a bill on this that requires that if you're going to do this, this is before Roe v. Wade was fortunately corrected. It wasn't overturned. It was corrected. But the whole idea that the left is obsessed. You know, would they even allow abortions if the babies, you know, if it was mandated that the baby lived? You know, I mean, what is this? They're destroying this humanity in the process. They're trying to destroy everybody else's humanity. And yet that's important. And I don't understand why folks, especially younger folks, don't see, you know, where there's like a humanity loss. You know, if it can be done to them, it can be done to you. Why would people think this is somehow okay to do all that? Go ahead.
I think the main thing of, like, a humanity loss is, you know, these are just, like, a theory, you know, of, like, it could be a mix of, you know, the education system of how we're learning and what we're learning and how we're actually culturally living our lives. And technology, I think, is one of the biggest factors is how technology kind of rules our lives. Because, like, because people have, like, asked people, like, who are pro-abortion and stuff, and there's either two sides. Either one, they don't actually believe it's a human being, or two, they're proud of, and they say proudly that, you know, they're happy to kill babies and that they don't care. And
Muslims,
they're pushing to be able to kill babies after they're born.
Yeah.
And so I think it is a lack of humanity and knowledge and a complete change of culture.
Yeah, it's one thing for a teenage girl in a horrible home, in a horrible situation, in a, you know, violent family, you know, who gets pregnant, who, you know, wants help and needs help. I'm not saying abortion is the answer. I don't think it is. But I'm just saying I understand that person. I don't understand, you know, the mature woman, you know, with a career and money who gets pregnant, unmarried, and willfully says, or even married. I mean, there's married abortions out there, too. And willfully says, I'm going to kill this baby because that's my right. I can do that. Those are totally different people and a totally different moral position.
Yeah, and I, like, there's a lot of, like, proof and stuff that has come out in video recordings of, like, people at, like, Planned Parenthood communicating with, you know, the sex trafficking people and stuff. And they would even say, like, out loud that they were doing it. And they would still go and help. And what Planned Parenthood does is, you know, they take in all of these sex workers and stuff and sex traffickers, and they give them a ton of abortions and stuff so they can keep doing the work. And they aid the complete horrific industry through it.
You know,
and that's
one
of, like, the tools they use.
that's a huge point. We've never explored that. Is Planned Parenthood aiding sex trafficking so that, you know, the people can keep being forced into sex work? You know, I hate to say that. There must be a good slavery, basically. Let's call it sex slavery. Simply because Planned Parenthood is facilitating abortions so these people don't become parents. That's a scary thought. I mean, I didn't think about that, but that's huge. That deserves a special investigation. But what about the mentality of this? You know, the life is so cheap. You know,
it's just proof that Planned Parenthood has been aiding the sex traffickers.
See, I didn't know that. That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
If you're going to do a special report on that, feel free. That'd be something that we need to know about. You know, or you don't. You know, it's a gruesome topic. You know, you can do it or not. I mean, just it's always an option. But I don't think we think about that as much. So now we have a government with no humanity. We have a population that's losing their humanity. They're losing touch with who they are. And yet, there's a certain population. You know, those is like our, us Action Radio folks. You know, we believe in God. We believe in freedom. And the two, I think you cannot separate the two. You can't believe in freedom and not believe in God. And you can't believe in God and not believe in freedom. Otherwise, you don't know, you know, what exactly is happening. And here we are on this island of strangeness, of people that, you know, that are alive themselves. And they think, well, that's okay. But, you know, babies are killed and that's okay too. So, well, what if they switch places with those babies? And there's like a disconnect. You know, they don't understand freedom. You know, they don't know. Well, how would you explain freedom to somebody that doesn't know it? And that's a tough problem because they don't relate to it. Especially if they say hate speech, you know, you should go to jail for saying something that's not approved. I mean, how do you get past that attitude?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of weird, like, because once you get to a point, like a certain point of your mind, like how far back can you really go? Like how clear can you really get from there, or how do you understand things? And it's one of like the big things that people talk about, you know, especially like within Christianity. It's like, you know, teach your kids, you know, build a foundation of, you know, morals and a love for God. You know, that's one of like the biggest things with it. You know, it's important to have a foundation because everything builds on that foundation. And whenever kids have, you know, this broken foundation or a corrupt foundation, it's hard to really, you know, dismantle something.
Yeah, it's the first thing we learned in flight instruction. You know, there's the principles of education, you know, Reginald Thorndike, professor. It's hard to unlearn something than it is to learn it. You know, so if you have to unteach something and then build upon a new foundation, this is what the military does. They'll take people and basically scrap everything they've learned and start over. It's like, okay, now you can learn it our way. It's a process that's been going on for thousands of years, and you know, the military knows how to do it. So how do we, you know, we almost have to do that with our country. We have to take the people that think freedom is getting free stuff, that freedom is not having to work, that freedom is not having responsibility, which is very attractive. That's the problem. It's very attractive to give other people's money to people so they don't have to work. This is great. I'm free. I don't have to work today. And yet they don't understand that that money came from somebody who did have to work. There's a disconnect.
Yeah.
We cover a lot of ground. It's interesting talking.
And
to
overall,
you. Go ahead.
I was saying like overall, it's really just kind of like a sad idea of you know, that's happening to so many people.
Yeah, and I think that the more organizations and groups that can reach out, so we need to get. I don't know how to do it. It'd be interesting to get, you know, more and more folks together, you know, from the high schools to the colleges especially, because that's where a lot of radical stuff is. So as you're looking at college possibly, where can you go in an atmosphere of freedom? And the obvious ones, Hillsdale and some of the other places like that. But what are the hopes for education when colleges have been so co-opted? You know, the Chinese have a bunch of stuff. The federal government requires stuff. They've taken over student loans. That's really, I mean, our whole education system is really geared towards a slave mentality.
Yeah. And the big thing with the leftists is, you know, the victim mentality, thinking that everybody owes them something, that they deserve everything.
So Why race?
And it's one of those like, things of pity driving
yeah.
the culture.
So it's like, and or guilt. It's like you owe. You know, first of all, you have to make people feel bad. Then you have to make them think they owe. Then you have to make them pay. It seems to be, well, anything else out of communism you've discovered here? We've covered, we've got elections, we've got race, we've got education. It really is. You know, and people, I don't think people want to think of themselves.
Yeah.
So people actually think of themselves free when they're really in a communist state. I mean, we don't have the gulags yet. We got one in D.C. But how far are we from an enforced communist state? So we still have the Constitution. It's almost like if we were another country that we'd already be the communist state. If we were Germany or China or any nation that Venezuela that was free and prosperous, that didn't have our Constitution, that didn't at least start with the free people to begin with, we could have already been gone.
Yeah.
Hmm. So.
And if- I mean, all of the communist tactics that have been played out, like in the game of, you know, becoming communism, have all happened in America. You know, it's not like it's not a hypothetical, it's not like a fear or a worry anymore. No, it's actually, you know, here and it's actually happening. And so it's not really a way of, like, how do you prevent it? It's how do you, you know, backtrack? How do you stop? How do you get rid of it now?
Oh, I agree. I mean, I remember
like
the worst thing you could be called. Yeah. I remember the worst thing you could be called was a communist back, especially 60s, 70s. I mean, the Cold War was just that. If you were accused of being a communist, it's like being accused of being a racist today. It had the same impact. You know, this is the last thing you ever wanted to be. And the American Communist Party was hated. You know, we don't want to, you know, tell you, I mean, we fought wars so the countries wouldn't become what we're becoming. I mean, the contradictions are everywhere. So the Marxian dialectic is everywhere. Why race?
I remember like learning about it. They were thinking of, you know, the domino effect and stuff. And like, if they don't stop communism, communism is going to spread and infiltrate America and stuff.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of people say, oh yeah, no, that's not going to happen. You see, it was like the stalemate and stuff. And see, it was only a couple of countries. See, it didn't happen. But then, you know, I realized one day, I was like, wait, it did happen. This domino effect, this spread of communism, it did happen. We are living the effects of it right now. It did happen exactly as they said, you know, we are falling to communism. And I was just like, you know, because a lot of people like criticize the ideas that they weren't going to happen, they didn't happen, but they did.
Mm-hmm. And people don't know what they've lost. No, I think we need to almost redefine freedom. You know, what freedom really is. Freedom is, you know, elections that actually count. Freedom is minimal tax burden only for the necessary expenditures of government. Well, let me ask the question I was going to ask earlier. Do we have a right to a nation free of illegal aliens?
Yeah. Well, like in a right form, I mean, it's tricky with the word right, but I would say yes, we do.
So in other words, one of the things I've been working on in my little brain here is expanding the definition of civil rights. Civil rights generally are based on what they call immutable characteristics. In other words, things you can't change. Race, sex, national origin, you know, skin color, well, that's race. But these things that you're basically born with. And what I'm saying, what I'm thinking, is that we really need to advance civil rights to some other categories. Ideology should be a civil right. You should have the right to think, you know, what you want. You can't be banned, not criticized, but you can't be blocked from education. You can't have your company destroyed. In other words, it's a violation of civil rights if somebody, you know, bombs Chick-fil-A because they're Christian. That should be a civil rights violation, as well as crime of vandalism or destruction of property or criminal whatever. I think firearms ownership should be a civil right as well as a constitutional right, so that could be prosecuted by civil rights commissions. Things like red flag laws, things like that. So let's expand this further. Education, you know, is education a civil right where you can't be forced into a government school? If it is, then you couldn't. Then the tax money that goes to education would have to be shared for everything: private schools, public schools, tutors, independent schools, specialized classes. I don't know, Little League, Boy Scouts, whatever. So Cam, should, and this is a question for next week, expanding the idea of civil rights to include these different things. Do we have a right to, I think we do have a right to a nation free of illegal aliens. So that we can, in other words, can we live a completely free life as Americans? Can we maximize our potential as Americans if we have a country full of illegal aliens?
No.
Okay. I agree. Yeah, I mean, you know, and feel free to disagree with me. Yeah, but that's a new thought. So I ask these questions because I pretty much know the answer. But the question is, the reason I ask the questions a lot of times is to get the question in your mind. And then, so then the question is, what do we do about it? I got Josie in the line here. I'm going to play her theme. Stick around if you want. We have very soon, hopefully, Cooey Griffin, Cowboys for Trump, is going to join us as well. So if you have some extra time, stick around. If you don't, then I'll talk to you next week. And we have we got your, we'll continue on with our merry course here. So hang on if you want. I'll get Josie on here in just a second. She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Cossey knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting, what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Cossey. Buenos dias, chica. ¿Qué pasa?
Hey, good morning. Dobre utra.
Dobre utra.
My friends in Ukraine. And buenos dias to the Latino friends all over the Spanish countries listening to us this morning.
Yay.
Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. Yeah. Brianna's still here, too,
We're
if you
excited.
Want to talk to her for a minute. Yeah, I'm excited, too.
Hey, Brianna. Good show this morning.
Hi, Josie.
Hi. Yeah, there's a lot going on with the illegals coming in our country, and I truly believe when President Trump comes in, he's going to deport them all because he's trucking them with Space Force right now. A lot of people.
So how's he
going
to do it? We asked this question earlier. I asked Brianna, and we can.
I don't know.
Some very well, Brianna, you want to, if you have a couple minutes, Brianna, you want to relate some of the things we talked about? It was quite interesting. She has a force plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, as just the hypothetical situation, you know, there's like just closing the border and closing the border in all situations, of course, because we don't want any more flow in. But the different ideas were deportation. Or, you know, using the same buses to take that or bring them in, take them back. And then there's the idea of the citizen militias force. Then Greg's idea was to take away, you know, anything that they have or given by the
civil
United States, like any property or.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Brianna wants to call it the militia, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. Yes, that's what it's called, militia. Us citizens standing for our country, standing for our right, because they're breaking every law. And this government has broken every law. And that's why they don't care if the illegals break any law. And they're getting fancy hotel and they're complaining about it because they're going to put them in a shelter. So, you know, these people have the nerve to complain. So there are some Spanish videos going around from people from Puerto Rico is like so funny.
What's going on?
I can
tell me.
They're complaining about all the illegals in New York City. You know that they want to be in fancy hotel.
You said Puerto Rican Americans or what? You said
Puerto
Rico.
Yeah, Puerto Rican Americans.
Okay.
Mm-hmm,
interesting.
Yes. Yes. So we Trump is going to take care of all this. We just have to trust. And believe that when he comes, he's going to clean house completely. And we can hardly wait. I can hardly wait to see the show start. So it's called.
Well, I was hoping he'd do something now because we've got the 22nd Amendment. I talked about that with Christina Bob, and she's like, yeah. You know, her reading, and this is one of Trump's attorneys, her reading is the same thing, that as of January 21st, 2023, it's now less than 2 years of Trump's second term. So, of course, we're hoping for his second term in 2024. But he can take office now and still run
he's coming.
In 2024. Yeah. Hey, We got a guest. Cooey Griffin, Cowboys for Trump. So let's bring him on. And so stick around, Brianna. This is going to be fun, too. This is someone we have a great public figure here. Let's give him as I quickly scroll down through my list here, a round of applause welcoming him back to the show. Cooey Griffin, if I pronounce it wrong, tell me. Welcome back to Action Radio.
Hey.
How you doing?
You're getting close. It's Coy like the fish.
Coy. There we go.
Coy
okay,
like
I'm
the
sorry.
Fish.
Yes, sir. Yeah. How y'all doing this
morning? Good. Coy, thank you so much for a last-minute invite to come to my Latino Report Hour with Greg Penglish here with an awesome Action Radio show. And we're so thankful that you're coming to give us an update on January the 6th. And I haven't seen you, man. Where have you been?
I know, Josie. I've been up at the hole in the wall. That's where all the outlaws have to hang out at nowadays.
Is that a secret location, or can you tell us where that is? Or are you just like all over the country?
I know it. You might want to know where it's at because we all might be there before long the way this government's going. But, no, I'm calling in from New Mexico. I reside here in New Mexico where I was born and raised. Though I've lived outside and traveled a lot and met a lot of different people, this is home.
Now, New Mexico is a battleground state. You've got Trump electors, don't you? The Republican state legislature?
New Mexico is ground zero for this war that we're in right now. Unfortunately, New Mexico is the bluest state in the union and suffers the most from it. You know, we have New Mexico, the landscape is amazing. The climate is fantastic. The culture is extremely diverse and wonderful. We have lots of natural resources. We just have a heap of potential, but we have a political problem where we're blue from top to bottom, and the result of it is we're last in everything, you know. I mean, every positive statistical category we're last in, and every negative one we're first in. And
That's a leftist tradition. I want to introduce you to somebody. We have Brianna Cannon, who is our youngest reporter, and does the government inquiry report in the hour right before he came on. Brianna, this is a great chance to talk to someone who's going all around the country and helping us in fighting the good fight against the tyranny. Yeah. So, Brianna, do you have a question at all or do you know Corey Griffin?
No, I do not.
Okay.
But now I do.
Question? There you go. So do you have a message for our younger folks and younger listeners, Coy?
Well, you know, just to study your history, you know, that's one thing that, you know, our public education system and the powers that be are trying to erase is our history. And for the young kids growing up, one thing about history is it's the thing that guides us into the future. You know, it teaches us the positive things that we want to repeat and the negative things that we want to stay away from. And so if that was one thing that I would encourage the young people to do is study American history and may it kind of shape your thought and your direction as you get older and grow up.
Okay. Brianna, then I'll get to Josie.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's a young, smart girl. She's good with history. She's good with a lot of what our government is going on, and also the illegal. She was just talking about it. Pretty smart girl, and I think you're 16 or 17, Brianna.
16.
Yeah. So I'm proud of this young girl that she has a lot of knowledge compared to a lot of young people at her age. You know, they're clueless. They're so attached to the phone and with little games. But this young girl, she's serious about She's on the radio station every Tuesday morning before I come on.
That's awesome. Well, and too, you know, Brianna, you know, I don't know where your faith is at. I don't know what your understanding of you know, God and the Bible and faith. But, you know, I just also like to tell you right now that we're so caught up in the politics. But really, when you boil it all down, it's a spiritual war. It's a battle of good and evil. And the better understanding that you have of God and faith, then the stronger you're going to be moving forward, and the stronger your platform is going to be, because, you know, God is the point of wisdom, and God will guide us, God will direct us. But don't ever put your faith and trust in man. You know, the middle of the Bible, Psalms 118:8, says it's better to trust in the Lord than to have confidence in man. And that's any man, including Donald Trump, including General Flynn, including all the, you know, all these big, powerful conservative voices, even those. I mean, you can glean wisdom from them, but never trust in them. Only put your trust and faith in the Lord, and you're always on good ground.
Amen. Amen. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So, Corey, what's going on? What's the news? Every time I Google you, all I hear are these nasty comments and what a horrible, you know, person you are, you know, January 6th and everything else like that. Of course, I have to skip through that. I have to get, like, page 8 before I find something decent on you. So what's the truth? What's the news? What you've been doing? What's happening?
You must be Googling my name, because whenever you Google my name, that's all. But that's part of the strategy of the left. You know, they defame you and slander you inside the media. And that didn't just start with me on January the 6th. It started with me on September the 13th of 2019, after I met with President Trump in the Oval Office. I've been in the Oval Office. I've sat down with the president. I know President Trump personally. He knows me. He knows what I stand for. And so these attacks from the left are very strategic. They're all driven through the media. But the truth always comes out in the end. And, you know, leading up to January 6th, you know, there's a lot of lies and deception that have been propagated from that day. You know, I mean, as I was there, I stood on the West Side. I stood peacefully and patriotically along with other patriots. I was arrested on January the 17th on a misdemeanor trespass charge, where they charged me for standing outside of the Capitol. I didn't go in. I did nothing.
I mean, if it wasn't so, you know, stupid and funny, I mean, it's tragic, but it's just, you know, they're just making stuff up. Coy, they're just making stuff up.
Oh, yeah, but I tell you what, though, it wasn't funny whenever they threw me in that D.C. gulag for 3 weeks of it, you know.
How'd you get out?
3 weeks. Well, because I didn't do anything other than misdemeanor trespass, you know. I mean, but you know, the government, if the government would have had its way, or the prosecutors, I should say, I would still be in that gulag right now. And as I mentioned, I walked into an area outside of the Capitol that was not marked. There was no signs that said no trespassing or restricted area. And, you know, it was a trap. It was a trap to trap those like me, and I was selectively prosecuted. I mean, the guy that traveled with me, Matt Strzok, he was with me every step of the way. Josie knows Matt. He was with me every step of the way, and Matt was never charged with anything, you know, but I was. Why was Coy Griffin charged? Because I know President Trump.
Fascinating. Josie?
It is sad because we were just support, because I was there too. I was in the back part of the Capitol, and I didn't see no signs either, like you just said.
Yeah.
We were just there to support our president, to support the fraud that we knew that it was going on. And I mean, they did call the leader of our group that traveled to D.C. And they wanted everybody's name. So far, they haven't come to me. So I'll be ready. No problem.
Well,
I'm not afraid of FBI,
no.
CIA at all.
And another thing, Josie, is that, you know, not only were there not signs, but there were police officers that were holding doors open for the people that were coming in and fist bumping them. You know, there were police officers that were taking down the barricades right in front of these Trump supporters. So the actions of the police officers just more sent the message to that they were allowed to do what they did. I mean, if you were walking into a public building and there was a police officer that was holding the door for you as you walked in and fist bumped you as you went by, would you think that you couldn't go into that public building? I mean, that's what was going on this day. And the worst part about it is there's still Americans held inside of solitary confinement right now today in the most horrible places of torture you can imagine for doing just exactly what I just said.
That's sad. Let me ask you, when you got arrested, were they forcing you to do the vaccine or to some of our prisoners? Because I know they did to Dr. Simone Goh. They wanted to give her the vaccine shot, the COVID vaccine, and she refused.
No, Josie, but what they did with me, and I knew that the vaccine was going to follow, but whenever they first arrested me, I spent 9 days in 24-hour confinement. They didn't let me use the telephone. They didn't let me take a shower for 9 days. It was a place of sheer torture, and the reason why they kept me in there is because I wouldn't take the COVID test because I told them I wasn't sick, and they didn't know what to do with me. But the reason why I suffered and went through what I went through prove and show what the government would do to somebody that wouldn't comply, because that was just a COVID test, and they treated me like that.
Yeah, but they could have taken that Q-tip and put it in your brain. And there's a lot of cases of people injured by those COVID tests. That's why I would never have one.
Well, I'll tell you what. They came into my cell one time with the goon squad with six or seven men dressed in body armor and a doctor with a swab, and they were fixing to take me to the ground and shove that thing up my nose.
Oh, no.
You know? But they had one of them had maybe two brain cells by the time it was done, and they decided it wasn't a good idea. But, you know, I mean, that's the evil that we're up against right now. That's the evil of the government. That's the tyranny that we're under.
So where are the repercussions? Normally when something this horrible happens, these people are responsible. They need to be arrested. They need to be prosecuted. They need to be thrown in jail. Do they have any fear of any kind of repercussions? Because obviously you're going to tell your story. It's going to go into a book. Someday there'll be documentaries made on this. Hopefully we'll have enough decent people in Congress to do something. I don't see that happening right now. I mean, where's the, what I call the gelding GOP? You know, the gelding old party.
Why be scared of a bunch of cowards? You know, if that's why they operate the way they do. If Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert and Kevin McCarthy and all those that we are supposed to be on our side, if they had the spine enough to get the footage from that day and show it to the people, then this deal would all go away. But, I mean, not only that, look at the Epstein stuff. You know, we have a majority in Congress right now, and we have a bunch of pedophiles that were connected to the Epstein circle, and Matt Gaetz doesn't even have the courage to mention Epstein's name from the gallery. You know, I mean, you take the shooting of Ashley Babbitt, that whole speaker's lobby thing, we've been gaslighted for 2.5 years with the same 2 minutes of video footage. We've seen it over and over and over and over again, which was shot by Jaden X, who is a known Black Lives Matter, I don't know if he's part of Black Lives Matters or not, but I know he's been part of the protest. But that's the only footage of that event that we've seen for 2.5 years. And Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert can't get us a couple more minutes from a different angle that might show a different perspective of what happened, you know? I mean, they're gaslighting us on this stuff. It's the same videos over and over and over and over and over again. But we just need to see more videos so we know what really happened.
And we know that the Capitol has all these cameras outside, inside and outside.
Oh, yeah.
Let me tell you, it's well protected, because I know. I used to be in the Capitol all the time. I know the top security that they have. And yes, I am ashamed of these Republican leaders that they haven't been able to get the video to show the American people what's really the truth. But the truth, like you said, is going to come out eventually, and they're just scared. And they don't have nothing to lose right now to make up all the stories and continue torturing our men. And Ashley's mom, we had her as a guest last Tuesday, I think I was telling you. And she was awesome. She really was awesome.
Yeah.
I told them they can listen this morning and they can call in if they want. Mariposa, I sent her a message also. So we need to help each other and stand for each other, because a lot of people that I talk to them in my store, they don't have a clue that we still have prisoners, like worse than having prisoners in Cuba or Nicaragua. This is a disgrace what they are doing to our American people, period.
I'll tell you what, too, that, just real quickly to follow that up, Josie, and if anybody out there has a line on Matt Gaetz or Marjorie Taylor Greene or Lauren Boebert or those that are in Congress right now, Speaker McCarthy with the majority, they're going to be complicit in this if through their silence, if they don't hurry up and get us. If McCarthy has seen videos that will expose certain people, and McCarthy isn't showing those videos because he's afraid of the blowback and what it's going to do to his institution called the United States of America. If McCarthy is holding those videos, he's going to be complicit in this, and he will be guilty of treason just with the rest of them if they don't move on this quick.
Yeah, I'll be sending this show to Matt Gaetz. He's our congressman here, for both Josie's and mine, and so he'll get that. But the question is, but they don't talk to us a whole lot, and that's enough for a while. That's since 2018. So what's going on with Trump? I mean, why doesn't he do a documentary and a daily or like a weekly press conference? You know, like the Truth Squad, get out there and get the message, because I don't have any faith in this Congress. Congress is responsible to the Republican Party and their campaign donors. So even the best of them, the Matt Gaetz, the Lauren Boeberts, and the Marjorie Taylor Greens, still have to run for office, and they still have to get money from somewhere, even though Gaetz doesn't have, like, PAC things. He's got his own PAC. So they're all still under the restrictions of the state, of the deep state.
Yeah.
Trump isn't. Yeah. He's, like, the only person that
isn't.
I hear
you.
So have you talked to him recently? Is there something going on with him?
Haven't.
Is there anything any news to report of like I said, he needs to be out there. And not just rallies saying the same thing over and over again. He needs to be out there with actual evidence. You know, he should get that stuff released if he possibly can. And where's the loyal intelligence? Josie talks about the intelligence community all the time. So where are the loyal ones?
Yeah.
Why isn't this leaked? I mean, everything Trump did was leaked. Why can't the intelligence folks leak the truth? But there's a concept. Leaking the truth. Let's run with that.
Yeah, I think the intelligence community, I think they're, if there is a big shift and there is a move inside, there are great whistleblowers coming forward. Kyle Serafin's one of them. There's some whistleblowers that are stepping up that are going to be our silver bullet in this. But the Trump question is a million-dollar question, and it's the question that makes my blood boil. Because, I mean, I know Trump. I haven't spoken to him since January. I haven't spoken to him recently. But his silence is really aggravating in this too, because Trump could be stepping up and advocating strongly not only for the January 6th stuff, but we're not even talking about the vaccine. You know, I mean, just recently Trump said that the vaccine has saved hundreds of millions of lives.
He's deluded. He doesn't know.
Honestly,
so sad.
Trump, the way I see it right now, Trump has his political car that's completely totaled out, and hasn't even realized it yet. I think that Trump could survive this politically, but the only way that he can is to humble himself enough to realize and acknowledge that there has been some mistakes made. He got some bad advice. And if he could find a place of humility and recognize that there has been mistakes made, and he has been a part of some of those mistakes that were made, then I think that he could survive this politically. But if he keeps beating this vaccine drum and boasting in Operation Warp Speed and being silent about January 6th, Trump is driving himself into a place of political destruction, in my opinion. You know,
no, I agree. I think you're absolutely right. This is why it's so dangerous. I want to tell you one thing. I want to see if we get Brianna back, and she's still in the conversation. Brianna, based on what you've heard so far, do you any January 6th impressions, or do you have a question for Coy? And then I got a big question for him.
No, I don't have any questions.
Okay.
Maybe all right. So calling.
Yeah, so I'll let you jump in whenever you want to. Coy, I just want to, before Josie gets back in here, we've had a couple of pretty incredible people on the show. We had Christina Bob recently, Trump's attorney. We had Peter Navarro back around the November elections. We had Dr. Peter Mercola on. And all three of those folks, and as well as you, I presented our citizen legislation. So the big bills, I don't know if you can get these out in the public yourself or if you can get them directly to Trump or both, but ideally, I'd like to have Action Radio work directly with the Trump campaign. We have a bill on vaccine product liability. It would put liability where it belongs, on the vaccine manufacturers, on Big Pharma, on Pfizer. That's the first one. And the second big one would eliminate big tech censorship. It would completely make it impossible for them to censor because they get their asses sued off. And so if we could just get those two bills, I'll text them to you. So I'll give you an Action Radio.
Okay.
They'll say, you know, my name and Action Radio. So you'll know it's me.
Yeah.
But if you, anything you can do to get those out there, because I still think citizen legislation, we write the laws that Congress can't. We write the laws that the deep state doesn't want. We write the laws that the corporate elites, you know, and trying to control us, you know, that would actually bankrupt them, like big tobacco. Big tobacco is the model, right? Big tobacco was brought down by liability lawsuits. Well, the same thing can happen to big pharma, but we have to get past their liability immunity. So
no,
what do you think? Can you help us out?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, I've got to – yeah, I'll absolutely help however I can.
Give
you my word.
I mean, the bills are
that.
Easy to understand.
I've got
–
yeah,
you're busy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No, you know, I mean, I've been – I'm the first elected official in over 150 years that's been removed from office because, on grounds of insurrection. After January 6th, you know, I'm a county commissioner out here in New Mexico. And so after January the 6th, I came back and they tried to recall me from office, which their recall failed because my people know me. And so since they couldn't get me out of office through a recall, they filed a civil lawsuit on grounds of insurrection. And I had the likes of Lawrence Tribe, Erwin Sherminsky, Dan Abrams, the NAACP. They all entered into this lawsuit against me. Took me before in a civil trial before a state district court judge, a liberal Democrat, on a bench trial. And he wrote an order at the end of this removing me from office on ground of insurrection. So that's the kind of fraud that we have out in New Mexico right now. And I haven't heard anything from Trump on. I mean, they're going to try to use the same thing against Trump.
Yeah.
Trump's been totally silent on it, you know. Flynn, you know, Matt talked to General Flynn about it and told him my situation. And I know Flynn, you know. I've visited with Flynn. I've met him numbers of times. And Flynn's response was, well, he needs to raise money. No, I don't need to raise money. I need guys like Flynn and Trump and Matt Gaetz and others to speak up in my defense, because money doesn't always just solve everything. If we're going to create a movement on the grassroots level, the most powerful movement is for the people to stand up and rise up in support of those who are being annihilated by the system. And I think I'm a pretty good example of that, but yet that's just never their mindset. They just think money and powerful attorneys, and that's the solution. No, it's not. If that was a solution, we'd already have won. We have to create a grassroots movement, pull up, and the only way we can do that is by speaking on the highest platforms about the injustices of the lowest people, you know. And if we could bring all of that together, then we can expose this evil in our country today, and we're not going to have people that are just indoctrinated by the media and the left, you know, which is the same.
Yes, if we've already got something organized around that, we not only have the platform that you're talking about, we have the legislation already written. You know, we can take this to the people, from the people to the media, from the media to the government, and put them in a position where they really have to pass this stuff. You know, and it's very straightforward, very basic. You know, we're not hiding anything. It's completely transparent. And if Congress comes up with a completely different version, it's like, well, let me show you the original. Where in the vaccine liability bill, it says, instead of saying shall not be liable, it says shall be fully liable. Well, that's anybody can understand that. You know, and our big tech bill, Big Tech Bill says they're immune from anything that you post, but if they touch anything you post, or if they touch your account, or if they arrange the search engines, they lose their liability immunity and they can be sued. So liability is the key to controlling both Big Tech and Big Pharma.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody can understand these bills, and I've just summarized two of them. That's it.
Liability, you know, out here in New Mexico, we voted 3-0 to not certify the election, okay, on the county level. We were threatened with fourth-degree felonies and removal of office unless we voted yes on a yes-no vote on the certification. And people would wonder, why would you be threatened by to vote yes on a yes-no vote and with a felony and remove us from office if we don't vote yes? And the reason why is just what you said. It's liability. Now this county or the boards of supervisors, we watch it out in Arizona with Kerry Lakesdale, where those boards of supervisors said, I think the election's rigged, but I'm going to vote yes because I don't want to get a felony charged against me. But that's what they're doing. They're shifting the liability on the county level. So when the fraud all washes out, they're going to sit back and go, well, you guys voted to certify.
Exactly.
But if we had people on the local level that actually were more concerned about their oath than self-preserving and would do anything to hold the line, then we could do what we wanted Mike Pence to do on the county level. We vote no on the certification until we get the machines gone, the drop boxes gone, we get voter ID in place, we get paper ballots. We could make all those demands on the county level and take back control of our elections on the county level. But, you know, I mean, I told just what I told you. I told Kerry Lake this the other day in the conversation, and Kerry Lake's response was, well, you know, we just need to move the certification up to the state legislators. And I was like, no, we don't. We need to keep
it on
the county side. We need a voice on the local level. That's where our republic is represented at. You know, they want to move all the power and influence up to the state legislators and the federal representatives. No, the voice of the people in our republic is best represented on the local level, on the county level. You know, that's where we can get our country back.
Yeah, we have a bill I'm going to send you that Diane Warner, who's our election integrity reporter, she's on Wednesdays, wrote, and I helped a little bit with that. But it basically, that's what you say, no voting machines, all paper ballots, all hand-counted, all counting videotapes. And my new idea that I introduced from a previous bill I wrote is that all registrations, voter registrations, expire December 31st at midnight. So everybody has to re-register every year. That's the only way you keep the voting rolls clean. How's that sound?
Hold on.
I want to get Corey's response, and then I'll let you go, Josie.
Absolutely. The voting rolls, the rolls are, that's where they're cheating us. Okay.
Okay.
The voter rolls are so compromised right now and so cluttered that it's just a bigger pool of voters to steal from. That's why they want to get the voting age reduced to 16, not necessarily because they think that they're going to get all those young votes. It's just so they have more votes to steal from, a bigger pool to steal from. I still have confidence enough in young people like Brianna and others that are like her, that are young. I still think they have enough sense to vote for people that are good people. But the reason why they want to lower the voting age is just so they can steal from more. No, I think that's great, Greg.
Thank you. I'll get Brianna back in a second. I want to get Josie out of comment first, then we'll go to Brianna. She's still here, which is good. Josie?
I also wrote a bill in 2018 for fingerprint ID that is, if Mickey Mouse and the military has fingerprint ID, I think the American people should have an ID to vote with a fingerprint.
Absolutely.
And that way dead people cannot be voting and illegals cannot be voting. And it's very important for us. And I have given this bill to Matt Gay, Hannity from Fox. I give it to Mike Flynn. I give it to Cindy Powell. And nobody's doing anything.
Yeah,
nobody's helping us. But
you know, even with the fingerprint thing, if it's digital, if it's electronic, then it can be compromised. You know, the hackers, whoever creates the technology has the keys to it. I think the safest way for our electorate
paper.
Is everything paper ballot and mechanical mm-hmm. machines. You know, nothing electronic, no digitally stored information anywhere. You know, it's all hand counted. I think mm-hmm. that, you know, I mean, we just we can't run the risk of technology whenever it comes to our voting systems, because computer hackers, they operate outside of government's control.
Well, unless they're under government's control. Let me get to Brianna here. 16-year-old, but we just happen to have a 16-year-old on the panel, so let's ask. Brianna, what do you think of that?
Like on the electronic kind of thing, just the other day, I haven't like really read much into it, but supposedly there was this huge hacking that occurred like all across the nation, where hundreds of, I don't even know what they were, I guess just systems in general were being hacked all at once. So, I mean, technology is a really dangerous thing to rely on, especially in the voting process.
How about 16-year-olds voting?
Absolutely, Brianna. And, you know, and with the hackers, I mean, it wasn't that long ago, if you research, that the American government had to pay computer hackers not to hack into our food supply, and they had to pay ransoms for them not to hack into our energy sector. So if our government is having to pay ransoms to computer hackers, that's evidence in itself that they're operating outside of government control.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, Brianna said no to 16-year-olds.
Yeah, and
voting,
I don't believe in
16-year-olds
voting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you should be 18 and adult.
Amen.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Koi, so what's the latest with you right now? I know you live in a little town, Santa Rosa. I forgot the name of your town.
Tularosa. Yeah.
Tularosa. That's so
yes,
cute.
The beautiful rose. Yeah.
So did you get married with that beautiful girl with you?
No. I'm taking my boy to school right now. I've been multitasking as I've been talking to y'all on the phone and getting him ready for school. I'm just like most of your other listeners out there, just trying to keep everything together and trying to, you know. But yeah, I've got a jury trial the end of this month. The Secretary of State has a campaign finance violation charged against me, which is totally frivolous. I had mm-hmm. Sidney Powell represent me in the 10th Circuit on the mm-hmm. same charge, and she lost the opinion. So now, since we lost on the civil side in the 10th, now I have a criminal charge pressed against me. But the beauty of this is I have a jury. It's a jury trial. It will be a jury of my peers in my own hometown, and I have great confidence in that. And that leads me to January 6th as well. If there's any mm-hmm. advocacy that you guys do for those in January 6th, it should be to get a change of venue to these trials where they're moved outside of the D.C. Beltway, because constitutionally we're supposed to have a right to a jury of our peers. And whenever you take mm-hmm. an area like D.C. where it's 94% Biden supporters, that's mm-hmm. not where our peers live. And that's why we're getting assassinated at these trials.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to run this by Jonathan Mosley, who's a criminal defense attorney, our legal reporter, and he worked with Stuart Rhodes of the Oath Keepers. Stuart Rhodes actually called us from the Oklahoma Federal Prison. He called Jonathan because he was his attorney, and then Jonathan called it to the show. I've got two recordings of him. I'll send those to you also. I'll text you those shows.
Yeah.
Are you in contact with him at all?
Yeah,
do you
I
work
know
with
Stuart.
Other people?
I know Stuart, you know. I mean, I never worked with him like with events or anything, but I know Stuart in passing, and Stuart just loves freedom. He sees the tyranny that's going on just like we do, mm-hmm. except, you know, he's an attorney. He knows the law, and he formed the group, the Oath Keepers. And isn't it the irony in it right now that the very people that are sitting in prison are the group called the Oath Keepers, whenever all the Oath Breakers are running free? You know?
Yeah, I don't mean to laugh, but the irony is hysterical. That the people that stole the government are prosecuting people that tried to save the government and threw them in jail. It's just, you know, it's very strange out here as to what's going on.
Just further evidence of the tyranny. Yeah.
Yeah, who's the judge that wrote that opinion? I want to see if I can. I want to analyze that on the show. That they actually declared you an insurrectionist after what we call the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in. And that's what, I mean, we use different language here for everything. So if you start calling it this, well, this was an invitational walk-in. You know, this was this is at the invitation of the FBI, the CIA, the deep state, Black Lives Matter, Antifa, and all the other
operatives. Black Lives Matter, Antifa.
You know, that's what it was. Who's the judge?
Francis Matthews from the First District in New Mexico, and I have the transcripts. I can send you the transcripts of the trial. And you're going to get sick to your stomach whenever you see how this trial was handled. It was just, and I've got an appeal right now filed with the New Mexico Supreme Court, and the New Mexico Supreme Court won't respond to my appeal because they're going to either have to eat the fraud that Matthews cooked up for them or turn on one of their own and throw it in the trash. So that's why the New Mexico Supreme Court hasn't responded to my appeal yet.
Of course not. The same reason the Supreme Court didn't take the Texas case on election fraud, because they'd have to do something. So this is a top-down problem. This is systemic. This is we talked about the judges being controlled earlier this week. That's the entire system. So what do you think is going on here? If you had to kind of summarize everything that you've seen, you know, we've got it's almost like a separate, and I talked about this with Brianna earlier, I call it the nation of government, that Washington, D.C. has become virtually its own country. And we're like the colonies. We're the peasants. We're the serfs out here. We pay our taxes. We pay to support it. But it really is its own government. They have their own system, their own walls, their own borders, their own rules, their own prisons, their own everything. And they operate on a completely different system. How am I doing? Yeah. What do you think?
Well, you're absolutely right. And I think the solution of it is just what I spoke to Brianna about earlier, and that's God. You know, I mean, I think this is a spiritual war. And I think the return of the Lord Jesus Christ is going to be the only one that's going to give us any relief out of this. And I think that's coming soon. I mean, the devil's manifesting himself at the Grammys the other night, brought to you by Pfizer, you know. I mean,
how
much more in your face and down your throat does it have to get than that? And in regards to D.C., if you look at the layout of D.C. and the symbolism of Washington, D.C., it's satanic from top to bottom, you know. So. We're definitely in a spiritual war, and I believe the only thing that's going to save us now is Jesus. And I think he's coming, and when he comes again, he ain't going to be on a donkey. He's going to be on a great white horse, and he's going to come back to judge, you know. So,
hallelujah.
That's the day I pray for. Amen, Josie.
Yeah. Hey, Coy, I know you probably have to go take care of your business there. Are you going to be in Doral May 12th at the Awakening event?
No, you know, it's funny. I never get invited to those Clay Clark events. And I think the reason why, Josie, is because I might swing a little bit harder than Clay Clark, you know. I mean, I speak a little bit harder, and sometimes, you know, that's not a good marketing point, and that's not – good for business, you know. So I mean, maybe one of these days I'll get invited to one. I know I love you guys. I know everybody that goes to them I love. So one of these days we'll all get together again.
All right.
Well, we need to form our own activist group. And like I said, I've been invited. I wonder if they just – I don't think they want solutions. I think they want to continue raising complaining to an art form and make money
off
it.
You know, that's the money. That's the money part. That's the power part.
Money.
It's why our politicians and our doctors only deal with symptoms and they don't go to the root cause. If Matt Gaetz and them wanted to go to the root cause, they'd start talking about Jeffrey Epstein. And then all the symptoms would go away, you know? I mean,
can you tell us about that before you go? I know you're limited on time. Can you give us the latest Epstein information or anything more you know about it?
I just know that the Epstein Ranch is located out here in New Mexico, and it still hasn't been investigated. So that's a drum that I beat very loudly, and it's probably why I come under the crosshairs as bad as I do. But, yeah. But, hey,
is it all fenced off, or is it open to the public?
I'm here to school right now. I got to drop my boy off. I better say bye to him.
Hey, God bless. And Philip is listening to you right now. He sent me a text.
All right, Josie. All right. Hey, love you guys.
Love you too. Thanks, Coy. Appreciate what you do.
Call whenever you want. I'm always available. Thank you.
Thank you. I will.
Thank you so much for being our guest.
All right, y'all. Okie doke.
God bless you, Chico.
God bless.
Let's give him a round of applause. I'll send him the show after we're done with it, too. That was fascinating. Josie, thank you so much. You deserve a round of applause, too. Let me see if I can find one for you here. Because you bring the most amazing – you do. You bring the most amazing people to the show. Ashley Babbitt's mom, Corey Griffin twice now. Brianna's still here, which is kind of cool. So, Brianna, what do you think of what you've just heard?
I definitely hear things that I hadn't heard before. Mm-hmm. I mean,
we do that a lot.
It's not very surprising, but it really does just – it shows just another avenue of how far we've gone.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Josie?
He stayed for a little bit. I thought he was only going to be on for 20 minutes, so I'm glad he gave us a little extra time.
Well, we get to talking. You know, everybody says that. Peter Navarro said 15 minutes, and he was on like 35. You know, so I listen, as long as people are willing to talk to, when they say they have to go, it's like, okay, you've got to go. I understand that. But as long as they're still here, I mean, I like to maximize their opportunities. That was fascinating. I want to get that judge's opinion, Francis Matthews, because that's something that's I want to get him connected with Jonathan. And I'll send the show, well, I'll send it to our group anyway. But it might be interesting, especially if, see, this is the, we need to unite folks, the real crusaders, you know, us, if I can be that arrogant. But the Stuart Rhodes, the Corey Griffins, the people that are really out there. Here's a nasty question for you, Josie, and Brandon, to ask the same thing. Do you think there's a contingent of people that are raising, complaining to an art form that really don't want the solution? They're happier just talking about it on their talk shows, in their events, and they get everybody else stirred up and they make money and all that other kind of stuff, but they're not absolutely dedicated like we are to fixing this. That's what I'm kind of feeling now more than I did before. Josie?
Well, I think you're absolutely correct. A lot of doctors, a lot of politicians, they're continuing their propaganda and they're not really helping like our prisoners. They should have been out of there a long time ago. And nobody's helping, nobody's doing anything, and they're doing all the shows. And I don't know how long the shows are going to be going on. And, you know, that's a money-making machine. One T-shirt alone is $35, you know. Everything is expensive, so I think they don't want to continue. And look at all the people that have their own little radio thing on different platforms, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what's going to happen when it's all over. What are they going to do, you know? So yeah, it's all about the money.
It's like environmentalists, you know, once they cleaned up the environment, they couldn't shut up. You know, they're forcing electric cars and all this other nonsense on us. Well, one of the things we have in our Australian Bill of Individual Rights is the right to energy. When we talk about, Brianna, you might want to take a look at that. I'll send that to you also, or just go on action on our writeyourlaws.com site. But the idea that, that you know, the environmentalists, well, Brianna, what do you think? How's the environment looking to you compared to what you studied, you know, about it? Because 1970 was like when things all changed with Earth Day. What do you think of modern environmentalism?
Modern environmentalism. I think it's definitely just a push for control overall. I think it's just another way to control people.
Makes sense to me. But they did good work originally. I mean, I remember Earth Day. I remember the hazmat, the Superfunds. I remember the stories of Love's Canal. And I remember flying into Los Angeles in 1970, you know, one of the very first 747s from Hawaii coming from Australia on a visit. And it was like this massive black cloud. I thought it was a massive thunderstorm. Apparently, it's just smog, you know. And then you get under it. It's like it was horrible. And then, of course, now it's gone. They don't have that anymore because the car engines are cleaner. Everything's cleaner. It's like environmentalism worked, and now they can't shut up. You know, they have to find a new cause, and it's just, you know, global warming. Oh, please give me a break. Anyway, just let's get to you. Let's talk about. Because you mentioned Colombia earlier and some of the other things. And do we have more listeners, you know, more Spanish country language countries are listening to this report?
I'm not sure what other countries.
I thought you said something like that, or just a general greeting.
Yeah. Well, for whoever's listening to us, I have sent the show to Cuba. I don't know if they're listening to us.
Cuba's still on the map. You know who else is on the map now? Cyprus.
Yeah?
Cyprus
okay,
popped up
good.
On the map. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're all international celebrities.
Colombia, are preparing. Some of my friends, we had dinner the other night, and they were talking about is that they're panicking. There's going to be a shutdown through the whole country of Colombia. It's going to be a huge strike coming up soon. And there's not going to be no food. There's not going to be anything. So it's kind of sad for the poor people that they don't have the money to buy all this food ahead of time, you know. So it's a big thing going on. They're going to do a huge strike to get rid of the president. So I don't know if that's going to happen or not, because they have a communist president that our system, Democrat and some Republicans, has president from Colombia. And so is Chile, Mexico, all these countries, you know. They're all
Venezuela.
Venezuela, so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's in Brazil, too. It seems like the pattern. Brazil seems to be holding out something. You know, so this is all, this is typical communism. Brianna was talking about this very first thing, what communists do. Control education, you know, split everybody by race, take over the media, and I forgot what the first thing was, control the elections. You know, and so there are no elections anymore.
And
so,
turn
so
neighbors against each other.
There you go. Okay, yeah, feel free to add more. But this is the pattern. And go ahead.
And in Cuba, Greg, they even have money for poor people and for rich people. They divide the poor and the rich, because there's only two type of people, rich or poor. There's no middle class, blue collar like here. And in Nicaragua right now, there's no one that can run against this dictatorship president. That's it. They're done.
How long has he been there? How old is Daniel
no more
Ortega?
Election in Nicaragua.
How old is Daniel Ortega now? He's got to be late 70s, early 80s.
Probably 70-something, older than me. I'm 64.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
And his wife, she's the vice president. She's like a witch in 2 feet. Yeah, she's bad, very bad. But, you know, that's what happened with a lot of young people, as young as 12, loving communists and supporting the Sandinista. Back in the 79, 77, they started on 77, because I remember going to some of the meetings myself. When I traveled to Nicaragua, they invited me to go to the meetings about Sandinistas. And so now a lot of these people, they're older. They've regretted what they did when they were young, but
right.
It's a little too late, because they cannot get Daniel Ortega out of Nicaragua, you know. So it's a disgrace what this family has done to these people. They're stealing everything, your farm, your chattels, your gold, sugarcane farm. I mean, everything. They own everything, this family, Ortega family.
You know, it's very similar to the Biden crime family here. I had some background noise. It might have been Brianna's line. So if you have background noise, or if you're not speaking, just mute your line. Then you can always, you know, unmute it when you come back here. But do you see similarities with the Ortega family? Oh, okay. Yeah, is that pretty funny, actually? But that's okay. Like I said, just mute your line and then just pop it back on when you want to speak again. But it seems to be families. You look at the families. You know, we can go back to the Medici in Europe. You know, and these huge families control so much, or in our country, you know, the Biden, Kennedy, Clinton, Bush families control massive amounts of power. You know, you look at the Ortegas in Nicaragua. And so, but right now
Somoza.
We have basically a Somoza. Exactly. Mm-hmm. We've got a crime family here. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Of the Batistas in Cuba too, before Castro.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
What's happening with the Biden crime family? Any news of we got this bogus State of the Union tonight? I have to listen to it just because, you know, it's my job, but I don't want to, because it's going to be all lies. There's a bunch of lies. You're going to lie about everything.
I think it's so funny. So many people have grabbed this picture of this balloon from China, and oh my God, it's just so funny. All the different type of little videos and little comments and things. It's just, it sounds cute and everything, but let me tell you, this Chinese balloon was spying and taking pictures or doing whatever they were doing, because they want to reach and attack our EMP. That's the agenda that they probably have, because if our EMP goes out, we'll go backwards 100 years.
You should explain that. This is why I miss Dr. Peter Price so much on the show, because he talked about EMP all the time. Brianna, do you know what EMP is?
Yeah.
Okay.
good.
Just want you, for our listeners who don't know, I want you to quickly tell folks how bad this can be and what it is, or I'll give it a shot.
Well, the 1 minute you drive in your car, and the next minute, if the EMP gets shut down by China or any terrorist, you're going to be stranded in the middle of nowhere because your car runs by computer, most cars, unless you have an old car like I do. We do have a couple old cars. Everything gets shut down, hospitals, any equipment, pharmacies, everything. And within 24 hours, you're going to have so many people, millions of people dead because a lot of people are in life support doing this, all these type of procedures in hospitals, and people will start dying and food will rotten. I mean, you just, it's a chaos. It will be a chaos. And the American people are so used to of all this luxury things, we will know what to do without electricity. I grew up.
Oh yeah, electricity shut down here. It's terrible. I'm getting a little battery thing here pretty soon to carry me through the power failures. Yeah, but it controls everything's controlled by computer. The water plants, you know, the electricity, all the traffic signals. I mean, everything's controlled by computer now. So when the computers, and it's like a nuclear blast high enough that it doesn't kill everybody right away, but it kills all the computers. So anything with the circuit, you know, gets fried and you can't start it up again. But what I didn't realize, and what Dr. Peter Price said, and what Josie's talking about now, is how much of our society is controlled by computer. So even if you have an old car, your gas station where it has the fuel, well, that has a computer. So you're only going to have what's in your fuel tank, which means you got to, you know, store all this, all the preppers and all the folks that are, you know, having all kinds of stuff and people with guards and things like that, and learning to hunt. You know, that's going to be the key. But we hope it doesn't get to that. But then you have to ask yourself, why would China do that? Why would they do an EMP? Of course, we know who did it, and the nuclear missiles might still be our nuclear missiles are probably still old enough that they're manual or have a separate electronic system. I would think, I would hope. Mm-hmm. But if we couldn't shoot down a balloon in a week. If we can't shoot, I asked Brianna the same question. If we can't shoot down a balloon in a week, what are we going to do if they launch a missile, especially a hypersonic that's here in, what, 2 minutes?
I don't know. We had a different view on that balloon.
What were you thinking?
Bernie from Truth and RTV was talking about it.
Okay.
Trump knew about it, and Trump is in full control of our military. He's allowing for some militaries to go here, to go there, Germany, because if Biden was in full control of our military, most of our young people would be dead in Ukraine already, fighting the neo-Nazis in Ukraine, but it's not happening. They're trying to get around by sending a team. Right now, they're going to Germany and different areas like that, Turkey, and kind of like work their way to come to the Ukraine. This is criminal who we have running our country, which is Obama in full control of, you know, the country right now. This balloon thing, we believe that Trump knew exactly what was going on and they allow it. And if the head honcho military knew exactly what they were doing, which, you know, they sent all the information to China immediately, you know, because China probably knew that they were going to blow it up anyway. But something is going on, so I don't think we need to worry too much about it.
I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure that Trump first of all, they kept saying that Trump had it happen three times in his administration. That's been proven to be false, obviously. Trump would have not only shot it down, he would have bragged about it. So, you know, you look at basic human nature. It's like, hey, I shot down a Chinese balloon today.
Yeah.
You know, so people that forget who, you know, the personalities, they give it away. Brandon doesn't have the competence to do anything, so he doesn't care. Millie probably talked to his Chinese counterpart saying, what are you doing flying a balloon over us?
Oh,
don't worry about it, Millie. Just let it go. Shoot it down over the Atlantic. We'll have our stuff. Okay, fine. Thank you. So he gets his instructions from his Chinese counterpart. You know, and of course, the whole Brandon crime family. Let's get to Brianna on this again here, because Josie and I have a disagreement in that her theory, as she told you, is that Trump, you know, is still in charge of the military and lets this happen to gather evidence to eventually arrest all these people. I don't think so. I don't mean to put you on the spot here. You don't have to be on the spot unless you want to. But I don't think so, because I think that if he really had all the evidence, these people would be in jail already, and he'd already be back in the White House, because now he can serve because of the 22nd Amendment, as I mentioned earlier when Corey was here, that I think I mentioned it. I'm not sure. Anyway, that Trump can now serve out his second term and run again for his second term, because he'll be serving less than 2 years, and that's what the 22nd Amendment says. So do you have an opinion either way on this, Brianna? I'm just curious. Is it all set up?
I don't particularly know, everything that he has.
Okay.
But, so I can't say, with all honesty, if I think he is or isn't. I mean, just offhand, based on only what I know, I would obviously have to say, no. That's not what he's doing. But, of course, anything is possible anywhere. But I just don't know enough of it.
Okay. Well, you have to go with what you know. And what you can speculate. We do speculate a lot here, too. Josie?
Yeah, but I do have to go now.
Well,
but it's been a nice talking
to you.
Well, thanks for sticking around the extra hour. It's always good to have you here.
Bye-bye,
Brianna. Talk to you next week.
I kind of have to go, too, Greg, because I have to go earn my money, my living.
Yeah.
I have to open my store at 10.
Okay.
And I know Philip is listening, so you might have to open, honey, this morning.
Hi, Philip. Hi, honey. You have to open
hey,
for Josie. So I can't resist. Well, let's give yourself a, sell your store. Let's hear what it is and who it is and all that. And as the gossip center and information control center of Pensacola.
Exactly. We are the information center in Pensacola. It's Ruth Uniform Shop on Olive Road. Come and see us. Shop for scrubs, chefwear. And get your ears full when you come. We share the gospel of Jesus at my store. And you can leave with Jesus when you leave the step out of that door.
Yeah. Do you have a website?
Very important to reach people.
You have a website, maybe you have a website, maybe our foreign listeners can correspond. You never know.
No, I should do a website, actually, but I don't have one.
Or get a public email. Get a public email. So mine is greg@writeyourlaws.com. So that's separate from my personal emails. But the public email, if you have a public email, you could give that every show. And who knows where people call from.
Yeah.
And we've got live chat, and we have the Skype line, so people can call us that way too. But when this show gets huge, which it will, I mean, we're on our way, it might be interesting to see who contacts you and from where. Like Cyprus listens. Belarus, the country above Ukraine.
Belarus
has listeners. Russia has listeners. Most of Eastern Europe listens to the show. I think Latvia does, but Estonia and Lithuania used to, and Estonia doesn't.
Literally.
But we've got the Baltic countries. We've got all the way down with Turkey listens. All Romania, Hungary, Czech Republic. All these places in the way. Slovakia. All these places next to Ukraine listen. And so I think, do you think Ukraine's blocked, or we just don't have a listener there? Would they be blocking our signal? Because everybody else in Eastern Europe, has people listening in.
I'll send the show again. I have sent it to some of my friends in the Ukraine.
Okay.
And they listen in when I send it to them, but I don't know if they can get it live. I'll ask.
Maybe it doesn't register if it's sent as an email.
Could
maybe they have to actually log in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, I'll see if it pops up. Okay. Thank you. And we'll talk to you next week.
God bless you, Greg, and we'll be in touch soon. And ciao, everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Bye.
Dos vidania. Arrivederci.
Bye-bye.
Arrivederci.
Ciao.
Yeah, there we go. Pick a language. we covered many in there. So everybody's left me. It's just me here now. So I'm going to play some stuff. It is 9:03 on an amazing Tuesday. This has been incredible. We had Corey Griffin, Cowboy for Trump, and we had Brianna Cannon, who starts us off with government inquiry, and then Jesse Cossey with the Latino Report in the second hour. I've got some stuff on the State of the Union and some of the lies that are being told, particularly on the jobs report. And so if you want to call me, 215-383-3832. We've got live chat. Which is also open. That's at the bottom of your broadcast page. If you're listening live, you can just sign in there and type a message from anywhere in the world. We've got the Skype line. So if you want to call by Skype, you call in, and then I have to okay your account, and then it's okay for the next time you call in. So there's many ways to reach us. And of course, my public email, greg@writeyourlaws.com, also works. But there's all kinds of things that you can do to get a message here or join us. I'm also on Facebook. I've got 20 groups on Facebook, and you can reach us there too. The big website for our legislative stuff is writeyourlaws.com. That's WriteYourLaws.com. broadcast site here, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And also, I'm explaining our bills. I'm writing about all our bills on Substack. So gregpenglis.substack.com. That's GREGPENGLIS. gregpenglis.substack.com. That's how you can find us also. So play a little bit of stuff here, and I'll be back, and then we can talk about lies, more lies, statistics, and then the State of the Union, which kind of seems to follow along with those. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engine. Hello, this is Greg Penglis for our newest shooting range here in Milton, Florida. Stand Your Ground. My friend Jason Myers and crew are creating an incredible facility for our city. Stand Your Ground is located at 6632 Elva Street. The phone number is 850-789-1776. Their email is standyourground1776@gmail.com. Here you'll find either in process or already going an indoor shooting range, axe throwing, archery, a rage room, self-defense classes, concealed carry weapons classes, security license training, paintball, a full-service gun store, and 24/7 online ordering. So come on down or contact them by phone, email, or website and learn how you can best stand your ground. From addiction to achievement. That is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with My Pillow and now goes to My Coffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of My Pillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. My Pillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at mypillow.com/WYL. That's mypillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well, so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's G-R-A-I-T-H-care.com. You can email them at gracecare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. Action Radio. Part of the ADHD Radio Network. The ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed.
through writing the laws by which we are governed, and had the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
Well, I do have to say it was great to connect with Corey Griffin again, and I guess we talked about a year ago, maybe. It's been a while, but the whole January 6th thing that just won't go away, the coup, and I didn't get a chance to, I got a bunch of stuff I wrote down here, but about what happened under the Capitol. I mean, that's the real coup, and we've talked about that before, but if Corey, you know, takes our legislation and starts making it more public, that's going to be huge for us. So it's just me. Just me and my microphone here right now. So, and all you folks will be listening over time with the podcast. Podcasts are doing really well. The live show, it's interesting. Most people still listen by podcast, which is fine because, you know, like I say, when you cover all the world's time zones, it's hard for everybody to be awake at this particular hour and have time to hang out with us. But if you do, it's great. So let's talk about the State of the Union. And the State of the Union is sad. The State of the Union is we have an illegal government. The State of the Union is we have a moron, you know, sitting at the top of that illegal government who thinks he can run again. The State of the Union is that we have no union. You can't have a union when you have an illegal government. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It's a non sequitur. It's an oxymoron. It's all the things that, it's the worst of the worst. You know, there is no government of the United States. There's no federal government. There's no duly constituted federal government because the election was stolen. So when you have a stolen election and you don't have a federal government, the people that are sitting there, you know, wielding the levers of power or throwing the levers of power, you know, who have no legitimate power, they don't care. They can do whatever they want. They can lie. They can cheat. They can steal. They can probably assassinate. They can throw people in jail. They can set up gulags. They can deny every right that we have, every constitutional right, because they don't care. They're already in office illegally. So once you're in office illegally, it doesn't matter. It's like an illegal alien. Anything they do here beyond being illegal, they're already illegal. So everything they do, they're just adding crimes on their crimes, but it doesn't matter because the original crime of being here illegally isn't prosecuted. We don't take all their stuff yet. We should. We could. Our own county here, our own county supervisors here in Santa Rosa County, Florida, you know, could get off their wallowing fat butts and do something constructive by creating an illegal alien free zone by using civil asset forfeiture to take all the property of illegal aliens so they don't live here anymore. If every county in Florida did that, our illegals would leave for another state. You know, California, Michigan, I don't know, New York, you know, Connecticut, Massachusetts, wherever else they go. But they go away from here. You know, they go to the liberal states, which is fine with me, because they're sanctuaries. So they're sanctuaries for criminals. They're basically criminal sanctuaries. Criminal sanctuaries for sex traffickers, rapists, murderers, deadbeats, tax frauds, cheats, people who steal your employment, your jobs, take up space on your roads, put their kids illegally in our schools and everything else they do. So with everything being this illegal, you know, as we talked about earlier, the stages of communism, stealing elections, dividing people by race, putting people against each other, ruining, you know, control, using education to control people and dumb people down, controlling the money so people think that freedom is getting free stuff. And if it comes from the government, it must be good. You know, these are all the hallmarks of a communist dictatorship. So that's where we are. In many ways, I'm surprised I'm still able to do this. I'm glad. Maybe they just don't think this is going to catch on. Citizen legislation. Yeah, it's no big deal. Yeah, just wait. You just keep waiting. It's coming. You know, different, like I say, I differ with Josie on how we're going to do this, how we're going to, you know, wage our peaceful revolution. But the end result is we all want freedom. So I'm listening to the news, and of course, Big Mouth is bragging about, and lying about his jobs report, saying, oh, isn't this wonderful? All these new jobs were created. Well, they're still bringing jobs back from COVID, so you have to take that into account first, that most of what they say they're creating just simply isn't true. Because if you take away somebody's job through a lockout, so you lock down a company, and then when the job comes back, when you stop locking down the company, that job wasn't created. That job was just restarted. You know, completely different way of looking at it. So I got a couple things here for you. If you want to listen to this, if you're listening tonight and you're thinking to yourself, well, you know, this jobs report, well, how did Brand create 500,000 jobs? Well, he didn't. he did what the government has done since Clinton, which is they restate how they do the numbers. So in other words, they change the formulas. And so you can't trust anything. Really, no government statistics since Clinton can really be trusted because they change how they measure them. They change how they measure unemployment. They change how they measure inflation. They change how they measure everything. And by changing the measure, there is no standard. So when the Depression had, 25% unemployment and the 2008 and previous recessions had, maybe 7 or 8% unemployment, no, it was still 25%. They just changed how they measured it. And they did selective categories. And so that's how they get around this kind of stuff. So, we were in a depression a couple of times, during the last, 30, 40 years. But it's just that it wasn't as long lasting and it wasn't as obvious. And we didn't have the breadlines and things like that. There's so much welfare that they borrowed, so much to keep people going, creating inflation for the next round of inflation, which eventually caused the next depression. It's kind of a cyclic thing. So I found something in Investopedia, there we go. And it's called Participation Rate versus Unemployment Rate. What's the difference? This is by Robert C. Kelly. Well, probably an Irishman. Robert C. Kelly and Christina Majaski, M-A-J-A-S-K-I, and Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y. This is September 27, 2021. So it's a couple of years old. But it's hard to find good information ever since Brandon took over. It's like the media kind of quit. And all the people that know stuff, you don't find them anymore. I guess it's like they're not allowed to write anything that might condemn Brandon for his, his criminal actions of occupying the White House and proclaiming all kinds of things and completely just lying through his teeth. He's going to lie tonight. I mean, everything he says tonight is going to be a lie. Everything after good evening. he may actually genuinely wish us a good evening, but it's hard to tell. So the participation rate versus the unemployment rate. So participation is the percent of people who are able to work or are actually working. So they figure like 16 to 65 is who they're talking about here. The unemployment rate is those who say they want a job but don't have one. So the unemployment rate is not the amount of people who don't have a job between 16 and, we'll say 18 to 65. Although high school kids work, it's part-time, it's different rules. But 18-year-old adults until 65, let's just take that as a proportion. So the amount of adults in that age group, 18 to 65, who don't work, that's the you would think that would be the unemployment rate, but it's not. It's the participation rate. Unemployment is those who say, well, there's like three or four different levels of unemployment. The one they give you is the least measure. It's those who said, who they've actually surveyed, who said, yeah, I'm looking for a job. They don't actually have one. Because how do you know they're not just saying that? So let me read the article. And it was from, again, September 27th, 2021. Participation rate versus unemployment rate, an overview. The participation rate and the unemployment rate are economic metrics used to gauge the health of the U.S. job market. The key difference between the two is the participation rate measures the percentage of Americans who are in the labor force, while the unemployment rate measures the percentage within the labor force that is currently without a job. Both are calculated by the BS Bureau, the BLS, the Bureau of Statistics, the BS Bureau of Labor. Let's go that way. It's actually the Bureau of Labor and Statistics. Okay. Now, allegedly, they're honest, good bureaucrats who are just, doing their job, and they're supposed to be independent, of the president's administration. But as we know now, everything is political. And so I don't think there's anything independent about them, but this is what they say. So this is a participation rate. Brighten my screen a little bit. It's getting darker. There we go. Citizens are classified as members of the labor force if they have a job or are actively looking for one. So if you're not looking for a job, even though you're of working age, you're not classified as a worker. You're, whatever it is. And you're not classified as unemployed because you're not looking for a job. You can only be unemployed if you're looking for a job. So if you're a lazy ass living off COVID money, in your mommy's basement, you're not counted. You're probably not counted as you're counted in the participation rate because you're a deadbeat, but you're not counted as unemployed because you're not even looking for a job because you're a deadbeat. Okay. So that's how that works. It says the participation rate is the percentage of adult Americans, excluding active duty military service people and those incarcerated or otherwise institutionalized, Tokyo, okay, there we go, who are members of the labor force. The 21st century has seen a steady decline in labor force participation. Well, isn't that interesting? Now, if it's been a steady decline, you're not creating more jobs. So there's the first lie, right? So in 2000, it reached a peak of 67.3%. So that would be during 2000. That was President 2000. So Bush was 2000 to 2008. So this would have been the last of Clinton's job market with Newt Gingrich, maybe? I'm just guessing. So the highest labor participation was during the end of the Clinton administration, second term, and the end of Newt Gingrich being Speaker of the House, where they actually had a balanced budget. There was no deficit. There was still a national debt, but there's no deficit. They weren't adding to the national debt. Hey, how about that? We had the largest participation rate when we had the least government spending. Well, what does that tell you? Anyway, so he says, so the 21st century has seen a steady decline in labor force participation. In 2000, it reached a peak of 67.3%. By July 2020, it had fallen to 62.7%. Excuse me. Well, you might not think that's a lot of people, but that's a lot of people. 5% of working age people in a country of 330 million? You do the math. Let's see. Let's just say half the Let's just say half the amount of people are in the labor force. Let's say 150 million. 150 million times 0.05 is 7.5 million people. So there are 7.5 million fewer people working today than were working in 2000, 20 years ago, when the population was less. Especially 5 million. We got at least probably 7 million illegal aliens that Brandon brought in. So we've brought in more people illegally, and we've lost more people in the labor force, almost at a comparable number. That's kind of interesting. Article says the COVID-19 pandemic had an initial impact on both unemployment and the participation rate. In fact, there was a marked decrease in the participation rate in 2020 in the U.S. from a level of 63.4% in January of 2020. That's when COVID first, you know, came into the country, you know, banning travel from China and that kind of stuff, to 60.2% in April of 2020. So from January to April, the participation rate fell 3.4, almost 4%. Almost 4%. That's huge. Biggest single drop, it says, since the year 2001, which was the first year the Bush that had a recession, which would have been the Clinton recession because they were all operating off Clinton budgets. Okay, factors that impact participation rates. There's a number of factors impact the labor force participation rate, including social, demographic, and economic trends. Following a recession in 2001 and the 2008 financial crisis, for example, the participation rate saw significant dips. Yeah, when the economy sucks, nobody gets hired. Well, that makes sense. So the drop in labor participation is because there simply weren't jobs, as opposed to the welfare bums that took advantage of COVID who were paid not to work. That's an entirely different thing. It's as many economists point to the baby boomer generation retiring and leaving the labor force as partly responsible for a decrease in labor participation. Oh, so it's the retirees' fault? No. We have plenty of people who could work. It says economists also argue that the decline is a result of low-skilled workers losing their jobs to outsourcing or automation, where the light of artificial intelligence gets here, right? Having no success finding new employment and therefore dropping out of the labor force entirely. So in other words, people looked for a job for a while, got frustrated, and stopped working. Well, how could they afford to do that? Unless it's either mommy's basement and mommy's paying or the national mommy state is paying. But somehow these people are getting money to live while not working. That in itself is a problem. So if it came from government, that means that we all had to pay for these welfare bums, you know, which means taxes had to go up. And so less productivity, fewer goods in society, you know, produced by fewer people. That's what we call a recession. Anyway, so dropping out of labor force entirely. It says, for this reason, they feel the participation rate is a more accurate measure of the state of the job market than the unemployment rate. I tend to agree. The unemployment rate does not consider discouraged workers, those that gave up, defined as those, it says, I said those who gave up. They say defined as those unemployed workers who would like to work but have given up looking for work altogether, usually because they believe that there are no jobs available. Well, get off your butt and look. There's always jobs available. Anyway. Well, unless you're a buggy whip maker or some obsolete technology. Then it says, however, there are a number of reasons why adult Americans might choose not to participate in the labor force. Students, stay-at-home parents, and the retired may choose to keep themselves out of the workforce. Well, those people you don't want. Well, what do you mean stay-at-home parents? I mean, people work from home now, so that's not necessarily applying. And it says there are six different ways the unemployment rate is calculated by the Bureau of Labor and Statistics using different criteria, but the most widely used is the U3 rate, which measures the number of people who are jobless but actively seeking employment. So if you take discouraged workers, the unemployment rate's a lot higher. So when they tell you the rate is, 3.5%, 4%, something like that, it's probably closer to 7 to 10%. the total unemployment rate. But they don't tell you those figures because they want to make it look good. All right, before I get back to unemployment rate, let's check in with Pianki, see what he has, and then I'll get back to my article. So, Pianki, what's on your mind this morning of everything we've talked about?
Oh, you talked about everything except for the national emergency that's going on up in New York. All the immigrants are leaving. Oh, they're complaining about the horrible conditions.
We talked about that.
The drugs, the crimes, the prostitution, the bad food.
The bad hotels, the lack of the Waldorf Astoria.
Yeah, Hotel California.
So what kind of arrogant jerks come to our country illegally, get all the freebies from the American people, and then have the unmitigated gall to complain that they're not getting enough freebies from the American people, that their hotel isn't good enough, when most Americans can't even afford those hotels? They ought to be deported just for arrogance.
Oh, no, they're not going to be deported. And I want to see how openly and in arm the Canadians, the Chinooks, take them in.
Well, do you know there's a candidate I've been following up there, Peter Polivier. I think he's French-Canadian. He speaks English without a French accent, which is pretty amazing. But he's the conservative member of parliament, I think, is running for prime minister. Do you know anything about him? He's on my international news. Well, if you go to our Action Radio International News Group, I put about three or four of his – he does like these eight-minute talks, mostly complaining about Trudeau and the solutions that the conservatives would have to fix. I think he's going to be the next prime minister, personal guess. I'm going to try and get in touch with him and see if we can get him on. I also know a reporter in Ottawa, you know, who might be able to help also. But Canada, let's see what happens with Canada. Because Trudeau tried to ban all the hunting rifles. And Polivier says no. And as a member of parliament, he actually blocked it. So they're able to stop that bogus thing. In fact, if he has his way, hopefully that to all of Canada's gun rights will be restored. Wouldn't that be interesting? But there's things happening in Canada. So I would definitely take a look up there. Especially as our largest trading partner and being a born in Toronto Canadian myself. So it'd be very interesting to see. Have you been up there? Have you been to Canada?
Oh, a long time ago.
Okay. Just curious.
But, another thing is a new porn star came on the scene. Of course, George Floyd was a porn star. Go by the name of the landlord. But now you got Newsom's wife.
The landlord? Wait. George Floyd was called the landlord? That was his porn name?
Yeah. You didn't know
gay
that?
Gay porn or straight porn?
No, yeah, straight porn.
Okay, just curious. So tell me about Newsom's wife.
Oh, she's also in the news for having some porn arrangements and also trying to expose this stuff to kids. In grade school.
So was she working in the sex industry, as they say, or was she trying to engage in pornographic activities? What's the detail?
As far as I understand, I think I gave you that story on her. I think
I had a lot of prep for today.
She may have already engaged in some movie, though.
Hmm. Okay.
But it just goes to show you the mindset of these people nowadays. I don't understand it. I'm going to have to go seek some therapeutic treatment in order to help me realize with my mind what the hell's going on. Am I missing something? Am I missing out? Is they all around you?
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier with Brianna, that we're really becoming a separate nation. The communist forces. You know, want to separate it by race, by gender, she talked about misgendering people. It's a term I hadn't really heard. In other words, you call a person by something I guess they're insulted. If you call a man or a woman, you know, and like at the Grammys last night or the night before, they talked about, the first transgender woman, in other words, a man that won an award for women, and that was okay. Cause this is the Twilight Zone. But also the satanic worship that went on with it. And I wasn't quite sure what Dorothy meant when she talked about that yesterday. Then I saw some of the clips last night on the news. It's definitely satanic worship. So those people are truly sick. From the economic side, I want to get back to my theme here.
She made her not, it says, It says here that her non-for-profit made $1.5 million from films with porn. And this was reported by the Gateway Pundit, by the way. And
so you're saying not-for-profit? Sounds like to me that's very profitable for not-for-profit.
The representation project run by California Governor Gavin Newsom's wife, Jennifer.
Who wants him to be president. She's nudged him all through from May. I remember Gavin Newsom when he was mayor of San Francisco. He walked by me and my daughter for a Chinese New Year parade. And I said, that's the mayor. And my kid's like, oh, that's nice. So we saw him. Actually, let me tell you, do you remember Jerry Brown? I'll tell you a funny Jerry Brown story. I've never told the story on the air. Jerry Brown was governor of California. He was also mayor of Oakland, and he ran for president. He actually ran on a flat tax, a 10% flat tax. Most people forget that. So here's the Jerry Brown story. Now, I didn't agree with him on a lot of things politically. His father was Edmund Pat Brown. So his father was governor. He was governor. He still got an allowance from his parents well into his 50s. But he was an interesting guy. And again, some things I agree with, the flat tax, and a lot of things I didn't agree with. But he was a really decent guy. And one day, because I live not too far from this place called Lake Merritt in Oakland. And my daughter and I, we used to ride bikes around there, walk around there, and we'd have fun. So one day we're on our bikes, and she stopped to take a break. And this guy comes up and puts his foot on her back tire. And I'm like, what the hell? What kind of jerk puts his foot and starts tying a shoe on my daughter's back tire, right? My kid, I think she's like 9 or 10 at this point. And I look back and I see who it is. And I said, sweetie, I'd like you to meet Governor Jerry Brown. He's now the mayor of Oakland. And she's like, hi, Mr. Brown. So we got to talking. Okay. This is how decent this guy is. So we're talking away, and I told him, you know,
please enter your password.
What? Am I still there? Hello, hello? Pianki got dropped. Am I still in the air? I hope I'm still in the air. We'll see what Pianki got. I heard someone, this voice said, please enter your password. So let's hope I'm still in the air. I was in the middle of a great story, too. So let's assume I'm still. Hopefully, Pianki will call back in a second, and we'll see what happens. I don't see any reason why I shouldn't be on. So this is why I keep telling these folks to put the dB meters. I've been after Blog Talk for about 3 years to get decibel meters so that I know when I'm broadcasting, when I'm not. So that was your line to drop? Did you hear the please enter your password thing? Was that you? Pianki?
Yeah, I think I hit something irresponsible, but that's, you know how
well,
it is.
Okay. No, I don't mind that. I just want to make sure that I'm still broadcasting. Okay, Josie says I'm still.
Oh, yeah,
thanks,
you
Josie. Appreciate it. Okay. So I've been after Blog Talk for dB meters, decibel meters, so that I know. And they can do digital ones. My, when I produce those commercials and announcements, I use a program called Adobe Audition. It has dB meters. It has decibel meters so that I don't overbalance my soundtrack or my voice, and I can blend them and mix them properly so it sounds okay when I produce all the things I produce. Anyway, so back to the story. So Jerry Brown has his foot on my daughter's bicycle tire, right? And I'm like, oh, okay. So I said, and I told him that I knew about politics. I knew who he was. It was really nice to meet him and all that stuff. He says, yeah, well, let's chat for a few minutes. I'm like, okay. So Jerry, he's bald at this point. He's mayor of Oakland. So he brings us over to his limo, takes out his dogs. He had these two beautiful Labradors. So, of course, you know, my daughter, Alexandra, is thrilled with all this. This is a great time. She knows he's a political figure. She's smart enough to know that. We must have been there 20, 25 minutes just talking about stuff, playing with Jerry Brown's dogs. Then he hopped back in his limo and went off to whatever business he had to do. But it was just this fabulous meeting. And this is one of those rare insights into politics that you can have someone whose policies you may disagree with, but who's genuinely a nice person. So I feel like someone like a Jerry Brown I could always talk to. You know, and like I say, if I had an issue with his issues, that would be fine. But we would talk. We were civil. We were decent people to each other. So I just want to say that about Jerry Brown for everybody that thinks that all liberals are bad. They're not. This guy was a decent guy. He just, his solutions, I just disagree with completely. So there's your story for today.
Well, you're right. All liberals aren't bad. They're just overran.
They're overrun by the market.
They can't do it.
Yeah, the
other half of them is just terrible.
Yeah, some are really disgusting. Yeah, but good liberals who love this country and have disagreements on policy, I don't have a problem with. We can talk about our differences
and,
in policy.
You know, one other thing, too, and I'll let you get back to your show.
Oh,
I don't know why
people
are so mad at China. China has all the right in the world, Greg, to have aerial views of all the farmland they own in the United States. What's wrong with that?
Well, here's a question for you. As a national security measure, should we nationalize the Chinese farmland if it's owned by the Chinese Communist Party?
Oh, well, they didn't have to do that.
I'm not saying they're going to do that. I asked
what's his name? Turtle. O'Connell. You know, look at O'Connell and the ties that he had with the CCC, Chinese Communist Party, through his wife, the big shipbuilder.
Who are you talking about?
Her husband.
Oh, Mitch, oh, Mitch McConnell.
Big shipbuilder.
Yeah, Mitch McConnell. His wife is you know, the Chinese shipping company family. Well, you've got Rand Paul, whose wife is bought a huge amount of Gilead stock. They're the folks that make Remdesivir, part of the Remdesivir ventilator death march. There's a lot of problems, a lot of conflict. That's why Fauci doesn't have to worry about Rand Paul, because he knows he'll never ask him the really bad questions, because he, you know, his wife's already bought into pharma, so he can always make it publicly known. Says, well, you know, your wife invests in big pharma, dude. He doesn't want to risk that.
Well, you
so
know,
only say so much.
Trump had her. Remember, Trump had appointed her to a position which she quit after January 6th, but that's the whole thing. That's why O'Connell stabbed Trump in the back. It's because of his wife, and they want to be able to have access to whatever they can, especially in shipbuilding, here in the United States, by utilizing him.
Part of the supply chain, as they say. Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about
same thing with Susan Rice.
Okay.
Susan Rice married a husband's father was a big lumber tycoon in Canada.
Well, that's interesting. Well, look at Pierre Poilievre. I'm going to see what I can do about getting him on the show. I think it'd be fascinating. He might like our concept of citizen legislation. I also have to get back with Corey Griffin, the cowboy for Trump, who was on earlier. That was great that Josie brought him on. Okay, I want to talk about unemployment, because this is going to be one of the big lies tonight. So tonight's State of the Union by the illegal government, giving an illegal State of the Union, which is not a union because we have an illegal government, is going to lie through their teeth, lie through their ass about unemployment. So Brandon's going to say, he's already said it, we've created 500,000 new jobs. This is patently untrue. And so especially if you take the worker participation rate versus the unemployment rate. Now, on the corporate level, when you had your company, Bianchi, how did unemployment work? And then I want to get this article, and I got one more I want to get in before we're done today. So how did unemployment work on a corporate level for you?
Well, I never had anybody unemployed. Everybody was working.
But they still have to pay unemployment insurance. Did you collect that, or was that just automatically taken?
No, you mean you had to unemploy. That goes along with the I think it's called a 910. But
it's the payroll.
It goes along. See, what it is that when my payroll service gave out the checks every pay period, you know, on Wednesdays, I had the checks for all employees. I usually pass out on Thursday. Then I had another check for the monies that I was entrusted to hold for the federal government, U.S. Treasury, which included the unemployment, included employee withholding, and it's another one there I can't even remember.
Well, it's disability. I think you're talking about that. Medicare, Social Security, payroll,
disability. That check
FICA.
Was made out to. Yeah, that check was made out to the Internal Revenue Service, by the way, all three of them.
Huh. I'm pulling up a site called Shadow Stats. This is one of my favorite stats. They have alternative data. Let's look at unemployment right now. And so these are folks that measure using the old criteria. In other words, and I talked about this earlier when they talked about the unemployment rate during the Depression was about 22-25%. And during Obama, you know, the worst of his recessions, they said it was about like 7 or 8%, but it really was closer to like 15-20%. That's what when Dr. Walter Williams was on the show, he said it was about 15, you know, percent. So if they measure it the classic way, it's very different than if the way they look at it now. So now we've got here, what's this now? Unemployment data. It's got, what are we saying here now? Our current, okay, I'm trying to find a chart here. No, this one looks different. U3 and U6. Oh, so the unemployment rate, they're saying, right, oh, it took a huge jump. 2021. Now they're saying it's back down again. But it was at a high. No, there's something wrong here. I'll have to do this another time. You know, because money supply, unemployment, inflation, The inflation one's actually easier to read. So they have inflation up at about 18%, whereas everybody else thinks it's about 8%. So if you look at the classic way of measuring inflation, inflation is really about 10% higher than they're saying it is. Unemployment's about the same way. See if I can get an unemployment chart here real quick. The numbers don't look right. They've got like 1.35. It's supposed to be like 4 or 5%. Anyway, I'll look at it later. But all right, let's get back to unemployment. So worker participation rate is the percent of those who are in the working age, 18 to, or I think I said 16 to 65, who are actually working. And so unemployment's a different thing because you have to be looking for a job. So let me finish this, and then I have a thing that's going to dispel all the lies from tonight. So unemployment. The unemployment rate only considers those in the labor force. For the purpose of calculating the unemployment rate, part-time workers are considered to be employed even if they are involuntary part-time workers. So you're only getting 20 hours this week, not 40, right? Or part-time workers who would rather be employed full-time but cannot find full-time employment due to inability to find full-time employment or lack of demand for their skills. So even the part-time jobs are considered jobs. So if and this is another common trick the government will do, is they'll say that they increase part-time jobs by a huge amount. We've increased jobs. Well, if you take a full-time worker and you cut their hours in half and hire two people, two part-time workers at 20 hours to cover one full-time worker at 40 hours so you don't have to pay full-time benefits, that's counted as two jobs created. Okay, that's a big lie. And that's just some of the lies we're going to hear tonight. Okay, so this is an unemployment rate of 5% means only 5 out of 100 workers in the labor force are without jobs. However, the unemployment rate does not consider unemployed workers who have given up looking altogether, even though they want to work. So in other words, to be considered unemployed, you have to be both looking for work and wanting to work. You know, if you're discouraged and you're saying, ah, screw this, there's no jobs, you're not unemployed anymore. Not under the measure that you get in the media. You're actually under, long-term discouraged worker, which is like U6 of the six measures they have. And that's the one that you don't get reported. That's what I'm going to see if I can find here. So it says at the end of this is from Investopedia. At the end of December 2020, the unemployment rate was 6.7%, according to the Bureau of Labor and Statistics. The number of unemployed people remains unchanged from November 2020 at 10.7 million. And this is written 2020. Let me get my date again. September 27, 2021. So we're talking, a year or so later. It says, let me see if I can go back to my spot here. The report noted that although both measures aren't much lower than their April highs, they're nearly twice their pre-pandemic levels in February. So this is the thing, too. So, Bianca, you probably comment on this, too. If you lost your job because your company was either forced to lock down or they complied, being idiots, and you were out of a job, then when you come back to your job, Brandon's counting that as a job that was created. That job wasn't created. You just started back up again. Have you heard about that, Panky? Folks that say that they got the job back.
That's the way the Democrats calculate things. It's 6% for these first $7,000 mm-hmm. of an employee. Then, of course, they owe an unemployment tax to the state, too, or whichever one you're in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you heard the economists, whenever they talk about unemployment, they say that 4% unemployment is 0% unemployment. Have you ever heard that that bandied about?
I never paid too much attention to it.
Okay. I did. And this is what I've heard, because to me, that's a lie. Only 0% unemployment is 0% unemployment. But they use this because the economists, especially the government economists, well, corporate ones too, they build into the system a certain amount of unemployment that they say is zero because you always want to have a certain level of unemployment because that puts pressure on the employed people to accept less money. See, when there's zero unemployment, employers have to pay more. When there's negative unemployment, they have to pay a lot more, which means there are a lot more jobs available than there are people who can fill them. That might be part of the reason for bringing in all the illegals to not only fill jobs. Not the ones that they say Americans don't want to do. That's a bunch of nonsense. Americans don't want to do jobs that don't pay enough for them to support themselves. That's different than saying Americans don't want to do the job. But if you're a poor person from Central America and $5 an hour is like $50 an hour equivalent in Honduras, then you're able to work a $5 an hour job because you're sending so much money back and that you're actually benefiting, your family and that kind of thing. But if you're an American that has to pay the rents, the bills, all the things like that, You know, you $5 an hour ain't going to get you very far. You know, so it's a different thing. So illegal aliens bring down the wages. Illegal aliens bring down the job market because these people aren't counted on the books because they're illegal aliens. So who knows? So that'd be a great measure. What's the illegal alien portion of the job market participation rate, which, of course, is illegal? That's something that's not taken into account. So most of these figures are bogus. Anyway, so this is a comprehensive picture of the job market. Taken together, the participation rate and the unemployment rate can provide a more comprehensive picture of the job market. A high participation rate combined with a low unemployment rate is a sure sign of a robust job market. Agreed. During the late 1990s, the participation rate was 65%, while the unemployment rate hovered below 5%. And here we go. Most economists agree this is one of the best periods in modern history for American jobs. Again, economists, and I've heard this before from several people, they say that around 4%, that's considered zero. That's as good as it gets. You're always going to have a certain amount of people unemployed. I disagree. If they're 4% unemployed, then say there's 4% unemployed. Then it says, however, the participation rate and the unemployment rate aren't the only factors used to form a picture of the job market. The employment population ratio, here's a new one for you guys, right? The employment population ratio measures the ratio of adults 16 years of age and older who are employed. The employment population ratio is less prone to vagaries caused by seasonal workers or by those who experience temporary unemployment due to illness, temporary layoffs, leaves of absence, or other factors. And of course, they don't explain it. So let me click on employment population ratio and see what that is. Ah, here we go. Investopedia, February 15th, 2022. The Investopedia team, including Eric Estevez, who says, what is the employment to population ratio? The employment to population ratio, also known as the employment population ratio, didn't I just say that? Oh, okay, they just take out the word too, is a macroeconomic statistic that measures the civilian labor force currently employed against the total working age population of a region. Okay, so it's often counted. Here we go. This sounds like a lot of gobbledygook. I don't think there's anything real benefit here. All right, so here's an example. If 50 million people are employed in an area with 75 million people of working age, the employment to population ratio is 66.7%. Calculation is as follows. Labor force employed divided by total population. Okay, great. I'm not sure what this is a measure of. All right, let's forget this one. Let me get to the good one. Let me get to the controversial one. So,
well, according to the debt clock, the total unemployed is 5.6 million. Actual unemployed is 10.5 million. With 159.6 million in workforce right now.
Okay, so say that again. So the debt clock, and which one do you think is participation rate? Which one do you think is unemployment rate?
Well, the official unemployment is the participation. You got 5.7 million that's unemployed officially. Then actually unemployed, that's probably just, I mean, that may be including people that's retired. That's 10.5.
No, they're not counting workers. No, remember the workforce.
About 159.6 million that's in the workforce.
Well, I got the debt clock here. I've got it in one of my many things on my thing here. So I want to get the exact heading because I think there's something to this, that there's more to it. So one of them is worker participation. And the other one is unemployment rate. The unemployment rate, the one that they give, is the most optimistic one. It's the easiest one. It's like people who have been actively looking for a job within the last month. That's what they're considering. That's the U3 rate. The U6 rate includes discouraged workers that gave up looking for a job that are unemployed. But they never talk about that one. So let's see if I can find my where's my debt clock? Well, give me the exact heading. Tell me exactly what it says.
Actual unemployed, which is the total unemployed plus all marginally attached workers, plus total employed part-time for economic reasons, 10.6 million.
Okay, I've got a debt clock here, too. It says national debt, $26 trillion? That's wrong. How old is this? This one must be really old. I should refresh it.
It's typing usdebtclock.org.
Okay, let's get a new one up here.
Yeah.
So U.S. debt clock. Keep it on my same panel so I can get a better one. Oh, there's the one I remember.
That's the display that shown in one city in China that people gather around and cheer every time it goes over a certain number.
So here we go. So I've got it here. So it's got gross domestic. Oh, this is good. We should refer this more. 31 trillion.
On the right side.
Billion,
on the right side.
652 million. So the debt clock's over three. Yeah. Payroll tax, income tax, tariff. Okay. Look at all these wonderful figures. I got to use this more often. I got to quote this. Tax revenue. So
yep.
Tax revenue is 4.6 trillion. Yet they're spending, you know, so much more than that.
Yeah, okay. The table's over on the right side, just about the midway of the. Depends on where you got your cursor.
Full-time workers.
It has some good information. The thing that gets me is the cost of the house. My goodness.
So, okay, so here we go. So the official workforce, 159 million is the workforce. Official unemployed is 5 million. Actual unemployed is 10 million. So 10 million would be the U6 rate. That's the higher criteria. That's discouraged workers. That's people who've given up looking for work. The 5 million would be those who were surveyed. And they do statistics on this, who said that they are still looking for work. Full-time workers, 132 million. So this is the U.S. workforce is 159 million. Full-time workers, 132 million. Part-time, 26 million. Okay, so far so good. Not in the labor force now, 99 million. So 99 million people are students under 16, are retired, disabled. All those different categories. So the workforce, basically, we have 100 million people who aren't working. We have 160 million people who are working. That's 260 million. And you've got another group that I'm not sure what you call them. So that would be – maybe those are the retired people. Point being, you got two measures. So we got two measures here. We got 5 million unemployed and 10 million not working. So what does that tell you? Tells you the statistics are kind of crazy.
Well, the
huh?
people that's not working, it consists of a little spectrum category. You know, like you said, students, people that's retired, so on and
right.
so on.
Yeah, that would be the 100 million. Well, anyway, point being, it's just interesting that it says there's 10 million actual workers not working, and yet unemployment only says there's 5 million. So the actual unemployment rate is twice what it says. So when it says it's like 3.6, it's really, 7.2. And that doesn't count the long, other folks. Look at the
cost of a medium new home in 2000 was $162,000. Now it's about $495,000. Look, good gracious.
And
medium income, $35,000. Today, back in 2000, it was $31,641. So how do a person on the medium income pay for a house that's $495,000.
That's a good question. They don't. People aren't doing. Oh, here's another Investopedia. U3 versus U6 unemployment rate. An overview. So U3 is the unemployment rate most commonly used reported rate in the U.S., which is what I've said, representing a number of unemployed people actively seeking a job. The U6 rate includes discouraged, underemployed, and unemployed workers in the country. So the U6 rate would be the 10 million. The U3 is the one people are reporting, the 5 million rate. So there's your difference right there. I'm going to post all these in our Action Radio Economics chart. Let me get this
manufacturing jobs.
Uh-huh.
Manufacturing jobs in 2000 was 17.3 million. Now it's down to right at 13 million.
That's disgusting. That's really interesting. I have to go over there. That's an interesting figure. Let me finish this up here and we can play with numbers more. I found a new website called The Blue State Conservative, which is interesting. So I guess these are Democrat conservatives. It says, and the headline, this is by Helena, February 8th, 2022. So it's last year. But it applies the same today because it's right before the State of the Union lie. Biden administration jobs report altered, manipulated, and fake. So they did it last year. You know they're doing it this year, too. So I believe this is applicable. She says the jobs number Biden is touting as showing how stupendous his economic policies have been. Oh, she says, no, as showing how stupendous his numbers have been. And then she says, fake, a survey, an altered benchmark, a faulted, defunct means of measuring employment and unemployment that requires continual modification each month as real numbers are released. So let's go. Let's see. So the numbers are fake. This is by Blue State Conservative. Okay, so this is like Democrat conservatives. This is interesting. This is presented by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The numbers vary dramatically when compared to the actual payroll audit done monthly by ADP. ADP's audit of actual payroll takes a month to compile before it is released, which makes more sense. We should actually be reporting the ADP rate, right? As a test, I looked up what ADP reported for December compared to the Bureau of Labor and Statistics. ADP reports a job loss. This is last year, February, right? A job loss of 301,000 jobs. BLS, the BS Bureau of Labor, you know, reported a gain of 510,000 jobs. That's a discrepancy of 811,000 jobs, or damn near a million. Therefore, the 467,000 being surmised by BLS for January is significantly suspicious and could be completely wiped to another revision of negative 350,000 when ADP releases the report in March. Interesting. The lie accomplished two things. One, it purportedly made Biden look good, which, of course, is everything that goes on in the administration of fraud. And two, gave the bludgeoned tech stock market a lift. So those are the same problems now. Big tech has problems in their market. But obviously this is done to make Brandon look good. That's what every administration does. They want to massage the numbers. It's just that Clinton started this. He's the one that changed how they measured unemployment and changed how they measured inflation, changed how they measured everything to make him look good. He didn't care about lying. His whole administration was a lie. Then it says, according to ADP's report for December, released February 3rd, the biggest losses were among small businesses. Even Christmas couldn't hold them together. Same thing happened this year. The other discrepancy is bankruptcies. In 2020, President Trump introduced the Bankruptcy Protection Act for any business owing less than $2.7 million. Biden increased that limit 280% to $7.5 million, thereby reducing the number of bankruptcies and employment losses. A numbers game, and this is making statistical comparisons worthless. Bureau of Labor and Statistics claims Biden added 6.4 million jobs in 2021, empowering workers to secure higher wages. The BLS closes their report with the demand that all workers get vaccinated while promoting frequent testing, masks, etc. Remember that from last year. Then it says, of course, the misnomer is – go ahead.
Well, these people, it is. You know, one thing about this clock, it's got a time machine at the top where you can go in back and also forward. But look at the very last row to the right.
I'll get back to unfunded liability. Okay. No, I'm going to do that.
Unfunded liability.
Uh-huh.
What are you reading?
Nothing, because I don't have it up. I got the article up. Let me hold off on that for a second. Let me make sure I get through this here all here so we have a little continuity. But this is because okay. I find this fascinating the way it's – no, it's okay. It's a good – that's a huge topic, but it's a different topic. So I want to get to that in a minute. So we've got here making statistical comparisons worthless. So it says the Bureau of Labor Statistics claims Biden added 6.4 million jobs in 2021. Okay, we've been over that. Of course, the misnomer is in the terminology wordplay added. When they say that they added 6.4 million jobs, is strikingly false. Jobs aren't added when people go back to – this is what we talked about just a few minutes ago. Jobs aren't added when people go back to work. In addition, employers have shuttered for lack of workers. It says it is similar to the means used to redact and add voters on the machines used in the 2020 election. The numbers are worthless. So apparently there is nothing sacred from their lies and propaganda. This is what I want to get to for people listening to the State of the Union tonight as to how bad this really is. None of these numbers are going to be true, right? This is we are truly living in communist China while our government is living in Sweden where there was no lockdown. This is Bureau of Labor Statistics measures payroll by conducting a household survey. Anything below $150,000 is cause for concern. Negative numbers send alarms, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The Census Bureau provides the names of households to survey. Well, isn't that interesting? Numbering 60,000 with the intent that they are a composite demographic of the entire population. And I'll bet you that's skewed too. Of the households, 75% of the sample remains the same from month to month, and 50% remains the same year to year. Computerized survey is then weighted. Okay, I'm going to get a computer. I don't care about all that. The numbers determine employment, employed versus unemployed, so as to define new jobs. The U.S. labor force, roughly 170 million, the survey would represent 0.0058% of the actual labor market. Okay, this is all right. So then we get to the good stuff. To add to the fallacy, here we go. I just found this like right before the show. Bureau of Labor Statistics has announced they changed the benchmark for how they measure the job market and have begun to modify the entire 2021 year to accommodate that manipulation alteration, increasing November by about 400,000 workers, which is a 200% increase. This is the lie you're going to hear tonight again. It says when asked about the altered benchmark, the Labor Secretary deflected by hailing the BLS, that's the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, as the gold standard of blah, 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 blah. But economists have stated that this manipulation will give the Federal Reserve the impetus to double the first rate hike from 25 basis points to 50. In other words, you know, 25% or whatever it is, you know, 0.25 to 0.5, which will bring equity shares crashing to a halt. It would appear that the benchmark was recalculated based on changing the total labor force from 170 million to 146 million based on deaths. Oh, that's interesting. So they sort of extrapolated from COVID. Then it says that would equate to 24 million people in the labor force who died or were permanently disabled. In addition, they revised the There's my 10-second warning. We'll go for a bit beyond. This is in addition, they revised the algorithm to include an estimate of those employees exempt from unemployment insurance, claiming this data lagged for 2 years. So they're fudging literally everything about the unemployment measure. So as a result of this altered benchmark, the largest revision, negative 489,000, affects the Trump year 2019, which is likely going to be used as a setup for data arguments in the 2024 election. Our politicized government is truly a theater where everyone pretends to be someone else. Everything is something else, and the props continually collapse. So now let me get rid of this, and let's go to our numbers that Pianki was talking about. But Pianki, what do you think of that? They've changed the marks on everything. There's no standard. You cannot judge any of the numbers we're going to hear tonight based on what they're giving us.
What a lie. Like Santos. But look at that last row.
Okay, let's see, I've gone to my old one. I got to get to back usdebtclock.org. U.S. debt.
And look at the second one from the right.
Okay.
Those two rows.
Yes, now so debt clock. I should bookmark this. Well, it's easy to find. I can pull it up anytime. So we have the U.S. This is for anybody that wants to check out what we're talking about. USdebtClock.org or .org. We're looking at where are you looking now? Liability, unfunded liabilities.
How much you reading?
Is that 181 trillion?
And how
million,
much
billion trillion
liability per citizen?
Basically half a million dollars. But see, that's not true. It's not per citizen. Because we didn't incur this debt. This is a government debt. Now, they may want to allocate it per citizen.
But we're citizens of the country.
Oh, I know. I understand that.
You're responsible. But, it's just like it is with the police, like your police department. The cities, people in the city are responsible for them. If they go out and beat the hell out of somebody and they file suit, the citizens are going to be responsible for the liability. That's what people don't understand. Look at Social Security, $22 trillion. How in the hell did it get up that high? Medicare liability, $35 trillion.
They took the Social Security money. You know, the money that came in ever since Johnson, they took it and they gave it an IOU. So we're just going to borrow this, but they never repaid it back.
I remember when unfunded liability was about 120. And now it's 100. This nation can't pay that. This is what people have been promised, like the ones on either side, on the left side, that they would expect to receive at some time in the future. They don't have that type of money.
Yep.
Pretty soon, everybody is going to have a pillow in their chair. We all being screwed.
Oh, I know that. Why do you think I have a constitutional amendment to stop the borrowing? If we stop the borrowing now, we can pay this off. We can get rid of all this stuff. We can take care of it all. But they have to stop borrowing. That is the single most important thing economically that we can do for our country is stop the borrowing. We have to, you know, we just have to impose that on them. Otherwise, we're screwed. If Jefferson didn't want it,
$181.4 trillion.
Yep. Well, agreed.
Good.
I see that.
Gracious.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. Everybody should go to usdebtclock.org.
Look at the trade deficits, $1.2 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
Your U.S. trade deficit with China, $403 billion.
Mm-hmm.
U.S. imported oil. Donald Trump had that down to like
we were exporting oil. We were exporting oil.
Yeah, look
that was
at
a negative
now.
Number. Yeah,
295 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Then look how much debt is held by foreign nations. $7.2 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going outside.
That's actually lower than I thought it was going to be. I'm actually encouraged by that. I thought it was going to be a lot higher.
Yeah. But anyway, Greg, I guess I'll have to see you tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, sounds good. Well, listen, we had a great day today. Did you get a chance to listen to...
It should be more conversation based on this information right here. That should be a whole show.
Oh, listen, I don't mind... Exactly, I don't mind doing a whole... You know, let me take a look at those numbers. Let's see what I have for tomorrow. Tomorrow we've got Diane's coming back, Diane Warner, Election Integrity. We've got Chris Kerb, who's one of our local flood experts, talking about how all the housing developments are screwing over the land. We got to get the middle hour. Maybe I can do that. Well, we can talk about this in terms of the aftermath of what happens on tonight with the lies of the State of the Union, especially when they talk about, you know, the nation of Vietnam, Ukraine, which is what I'm now calling it. So there's a lot of things,
okay.
A lot of things to talk about. Let's
talk
tomorrow.
Don't forget
Thank
the time machine up at the top right corner.
Hang on,
where you
can
go back in time and go up in time.
Really? How far can I go back?
Yeah, you got the red one on the left.
Let's go back to 1980. U.S. national debt.
That's when America.
$800 billion.
That's when America was kind of great, right?
1980.
I'll see you tomorrow, man.
Okay, take care, Bianchi. Thank you. Yeah, I'm just going to, now that I'm here, you know, I got a couple of minutes, I might go over this here. All right, so here's where we were. U.S. national debt in 1980. Okay, start of Ronald Reagan's term. $862 billion, or is it trillion? Let me see. 100,000, that would be million. Yeah, $862 billion. I didn't even reach a trillion yet, right? That's nothing. U.S. federal tax revenue, 400, was it billion? Is that trillion? Yeah, $404 billion was the revenue. Now it's like $4.5 trillion. Of course, I guess this accounts for inflation. I'm not really sure. Huh, that's interesting. Let's go back. Let's go back to where we are now. Well, then they've got on this day in 2027, they actually go ahead. The national debt is $36 trillion. That's only, this is 2023. That's 4 years from now. $36 trillion. I bet you it's going to be higher than that unless we stop this. We have to stop this. Anyway, I've had enough fun. It's been crazy. All right, play a couple more things for you. Again, our websites, writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws. That's where you find us for our legislative stuff. Our show site, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. My Substack is gregpenglis.substack.com. That's where I write articles explaining all the stuff we do here. And then our GiveSendGo account, givesendgo.com/actionradio. You want to help us out? All that information is on your broadcast page, as well as our discount code WYL. Stands for Write Your Laws. For all of our discount categories, My Pillow, Grave Care, all those Strikeforce energy drinks, all those things, that's on our broadcast page also. In fact, pretty much everything's on our broadcast page. I'll see you tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Bill Fecky's still off, so we'll have Wendy at 7:30. I'll figure out what to do the first half hour, probably talking about the lying state of the union, and we'll see what happens. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive. conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed.